Can we get all the RAC members up front sitting down and audience sitting down? Evidently, this meeting went on for about 6 hours last night, and I'd like to see if we can make it a little shorter than 6 hours, if we could. So we need to get moving. I'd like to welcome everybody here, all the RAC members and the public. It looks like we've got some interest, which is a good thing. Just to kind of let you know what we're going to do tonight as far as public comment, we're going to get the presentation of the division's recommendation, and then the RAC will have an opportunity to ask questions of the division. When the RAC is through asking questions, then the questions will be opened up to the public. I ask that you try to refrain from using the question session as a comment session. We promise we'll give you plenty of time to make comments after the questions. The question session is designed for you to clarify in your mind what the recommendation is and to help you form your own comment and recommendation. So if you can just keep it to questions, I would really appreciate it. If it looks like it's going off on a comment, I'm going to stop you and ask you to hold that until we get to comments. After the public has opportunity for comment or questions, then it will be opened up to the public for comments. Depending on, we usually have sign-up cards, but even though we don't have them tonight, so if you can just write your name on a piece of paper and bring it up to me, that'll be the comment card. I'm going to try not to limit time. If it looks like we've got a lot of comment cards coming up, I'll probably limit individuals to 2 minutes and organizations to five if we have to go that way. I'm hoping we don't have to. I just as soon get everybody's full comment instead of the abbreviated version. After we receive your comments, it'll be closed to the public and it'll be opened up to the RAC for discussion and hear some of their views and hopefully form a motion and have a vote with the recommendation to take forward to the board. Does anybody have any changes to the agenda or the minutes? Brent, do we need to vote on agenda and minutes? It doesn't say action, but...
Yeah, just approve it.
Okay. All in favor of the minutes and agendas?
Take a motion first.
Oh, okay. Kevin will make a motion.
Yeah, I'll make a motion to accept the minutes.
Do we have a second? Kevin... move. Jeff, second to approve the minutes. All in favor? Unanimous. Brad King couldn't make it tonight for the Wildlife Board update. He's tied up at, he's getting his rating or something today. So. Okay. Was that motion for the agenda and the minutes, Kevin?
Sure.
So done. The board met so long ago, it was back in January on the bear. We have, trying to remember exactly what all... There's going to be for new things coming up on in this year's bear hunt. We're going to have 3 harvest objective units, 3 limited entry spot and stock, and 12 units will have extended spring season. And the rule was a 3-year rule, so we're not going to have to be meeting on this till 2015, I guess. So, Is there any particular questions on the Bears instead of spending a lot of time going through what the board did? Okay.
I might just add something. One thing of interest is we do have three harvest objective units, and one of them starts here, starts up right away. Justin, what were the three units that were approved? Oh, there's one in the spring.
There was a 9 mile part of the, I think it's the Aviniquin. Is it the Aviniquin, Brad? And then one in the southern region, and I can't remember which one that was. I don't know.
Are they all fall seasons?
No, one's a spring season right now. One's a fall season that'll be harvest objective after the limited entry hunts, and then one is similar to a split season, how they have it with cougars, where limited entry gets to hunt first, whatever's not killed is open to harvest objective later.
So
it's three different types is what the plan called for the test. So,
which is the 9 mile range group one?
That's the split one. So harvest the limited entry guys get to harvest as many as they can, and whatever's not filled, that'll be harvest objective in the fall. So that's the split.
Yeah, but it's limited entry this spring.
Yes.
Not
sorry,
harvest
this spring.
Objective until fall.
That's right. Okay. Yeah, it's in the northeast region that has the harvest objective spring right now.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
Let's go ahead and go to the regional update, Bill.
I really don't have a lot tonight because of the length of the potential length of the meeting. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer those. But in the interest of time, I think we'll just move on tonight if that's all right.
I have a question. I was listening to the Wildlife Board minutes, and I have a question. How did the division get the $1.75 million for the coyote control? How come that didn't go to the Wildlife Services instead?
Well, some of that does go to Wildlife Services. What there was several different appropriations. There was just, you know, I might have the notes here, but off the top of my head, we had, take a look right here. I do have the notes. We got $1.1 million from new money from, there were two different bills. Senator Hinkins had a bill that put a $5 additional fee on all big game permits. And then Senator Okerlund had one that just appropriated $500,000 to the Division for Predator Control. And what's going to happen, so that coupled with the existing money that we already had, we'll come up to $1.75 million. We were already putting in about $385,000, something, you know, give or take. I don't know the exact number there. But what we're going to do with the money is $675,000 is going to go directly to Wildlife Services for targeted coyote control. $100,000 will go to cover the county match for the bounty program. So there will no longer be a county match. The division's putting up $100,000 to cover that. And then there's $100,000 to be the division's part of the match, so there'll be a total of $200,000 from that put into the bounty program. We're going to take, and this is still preliminary. I mean, this is just kind of the general approach we're working on right now. Then there's going to be $450,000 that we're going to use for private contracts. That's where we contract with certain individuals to go out and kill coyotes in certain places at certain times, and we'll pay them an amount per coyote. And what we are going to do also is we're going to take about $250,000 more or less and hire three individuals, one to coordinate the program statewide and then one each in each of the two Wildlife Services areas in the state. There's a northern area and a southern area, and they will administer those private contracts and also direct Wildlife Services on where we want them to go target coyotes. And then there will be another $175,000 we're going to use for unforeseen things or opportunities that haven't come up yet. And some of this money will also go into the, I don't know if this is going, but we're also putting money into the Monroe deer study down there where they're going to be looking at different levels of coyote control on the northern unit, or part of the unit, and southern part of the unit, and then they'll switch after 3 years and to see if this makes a difference. So that's, in a nutshell, that's where the money's going. So really, hardly any of it's going to go, well, none of it's going to any existing program in the division. It's just going to, you know, basically be used to kill coyotes statewide as best we can. Does that help?
But you're hiring three new people to use up some of that money.
Right.
Instead of Wildlife Services already having the employees to do it, wouldn't that money be?
Well, I don't think that they would agree with you on that, that this is, you know, I think if you think about the workload associated with setting up contracts to hire people to go out and kill coyotes statewide, you know, we want those guys that work for Wildlife Services out doing their jobs, you know, killing coyotes, and they're very effective at it. Seems like a waste of resources to have them be administering contracts. So that the intention, well, Anish, do you want to?
Yeah, so basically what those people are going to be doing is coordinating between the division and Wildlife Services to make sure that both there's no overlap in efforts and that we're targeting the right areas at the right time. So that's what those two people that will be north and south will be doing. And then also they'll be doing some coyote removal themselves. There'll be a person in Salt Lake that will basically be doing contracts. So we're roughly going to have around 100 contracts through different individuals doing coyote control. So that's the current structure as it stands. Again, as Bill mentioned, it's still preliminary, and it was just a sketch that Director Karpowitz put out there as what we're looking at doing. None of it is set in stone. And again, we don't start these programs until money's available 1st of July. So.
All right. And the intention is for somebody, though, like Kevin Dustin, is get him out there killing things, you know, killing coyotes, excuse me, the best thing we'd like him to do.
Is there any other questions of the division before we dive into the Bucks Bulls once in a lifetime? Okay, let's hear what you have to say, Anise.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman, RAC members. Today I'll be presenting Bucks and Bulls Once in a Lifetime permit number and a couple of rule change recommendations. On the agenda item, it splits out the general season permit numbers by itself, so I'll stop at that point, and then we can discuss that, and you can vote on it, and then I'll proceed with the rest of the Bucks and Bulls and recommendations. Okay. All right, first I'll just show some of our data that we gather annually. So this is a graph showing buck harvest statewide from 2001 to present, so a 10-year trend. Basically, it's been as high as, you know, 27,000, 28,000 bucks harvested and as low as 18. And as you can see, the last 2 years have been fairly low because we have been cutting permits the last couple of years statewide. So we've went from a high of 97,000 permits to a low of last year was 87,000 permits. So we've cut 10,000 permits, and that shows in the harvest as well. Okay, this graph shows the fawn production trends. So this is our fawn to doe ratios statewide. Basically, you can kind of see the trend that it's taken. Usually when you see drought years, like we saw the height of the drought in 2002, you do see low fawn production. We did have some of them recover, and then again it dipped a second time in that 2007-2008 period where we had a milder drought, not as bad as the 2002 drought, and we kind of pulled out of it a little bit, and then it's dipping again. You know, and if you look at a long-term trend, it does this a lot. It's a lot of it is weather-driven. You know, some of it is either winter weather, some of it is summer weather. It just depends on the conditions and where in the state. One thing I like to mention when I put this graph up is for the most part, a rule of thumb is if we're above 60 fawns per 100 does on a statewide basis, we're usually stable. If we're above that, we can be growing on a statewide basis. That's kind of a rule of thumb that we've seen through long-term data. Of course, it varies. On some drier units, you could actually have lower Fondo ratios and still be maintaining because winter mortality is not a big issue. So just a kind of a thing to keep in the back of your mind. So about a 60 fawn per 100 doe usually is a break-even number for mule deer at this latitude. Okay, this is a buck to doe ratio trend, basically from 1998 to present. I put a couple of dotted lines out there. The lower one represents the 15 bucks per 100 does that we have been managing for, and then the 18 bucks per 100 does is the top dotted line. So that what that shows you is if we go 18 to 20 or 25 statewide, we would need to cut permits, so our buck to doe ratio would rise above that. If we had a hybrid system, as I'll mention here, we could move some units up to that 18 or above objective and keep some units below without losing a lot more permits. But overall, our buck doe ratio trends tend to stay within that 15 to 18 range. Okay. The general season permit recommendations that we will be recommending will require a plan amendment. Basically, after we amended the plan last year to make all units 18 to 25, the Wildlife Board actually gave us direction to look at these units again and see if we can come up with a mixed approach where some units are managed for a higher objective, some units for a lower objective. Their concern was that we may be losing too much opportunity if we manage all units 18 to 25. So if we do that, this would require an amendment to the plan. And then the way we've approached it is we're going to recommend placing general season units into one of two objective categories, either 15 to 17 bucks per 100 does or 18 to 20 bucks per 100 does. And the way we came up with those is we started out internally brainstorming, figuring out, where what objectives should be and what units should go into what. And then we came up with this rough sketch, and then we asked the regions to go out and gather public input, and there was a lot of public meetings and open houses that discussed this. And then the regions basically came back and said, this is what the public thinks, and then that's kind of how we came up with what we have now. So similarly, now that we have two objectives, we had to figure out which units fit best under what objective. So our thought process was, there are some units who lend themselves to high harvest. So those units would be harder to manage under a high buck to doe ratio because you would have to really reduce permits to increase that buck to doe ratio. So we thought that on these units that have a lot of good access and are primarily public land, they would fit best in a 15 to 17 buck to doe ratio. Now there are units where it doesn't matter how many permits you put out there, there's such limited access, either because it's wilderness or private lands, buck to doe ratios remain high. Those are units we are recommending go into the 18 to 20 buck per 100 doe. Now, if we just use those criteria alone, we ended up actually with more units that were in the lower buck to doe ratio objective. Initially, we came up with about, 12 that were in the 18 to 20 and 18 that were in 15 to 17. But as I mentioned, we didn't use that criteria alone. We asked the regions to go out and ask our constituents what they thought of that approach. And they came back and said, well, even though this such and such a unit is primarily public land, that our constituents in this region would really like it to be at this objective. And that's kind of how we modified some of these. So the final number we came up with is 16 units were assigned the 18 to 20 objective, and 14 units were assigned the 15 to 17 objective. Okay, our number recommendations. So now that we have the units, we have the objectives, we need to figure out how many permits need to go on all these units. And then to come up with permit numbers, we didn't want to shoot for the lower end of the objective. We shot for the middle of the objective. So if a unit is going to be managed for 15 to 17, we want to manage for 16 instead of 15. And similarly, if it's 18 to 20, we want to manage for 19. So to get a starting point, we looked back in our harvest data and basically pulled out our general season buck harvest success rates on these units and establish an average number of permits. So this, the way this was done is we have harvest data by unit, even though we were hunting by region. We know how many bucks were harvested on each unit. So we took that three-year average bucks harvested, applied the success rates on those specific units, which allowed us to come up with a permit numbers that was on those units to harvest that many bucks. So we used that as a starting point. And then we increased or decreased the permits on that starting point based on where the buck to doe, the three-year average is on that unit currently. And the formula we used basically took 10 years of data of harvest under different regimes, under high buck doe ratios, under low buck doe ratios, and basically created a formula that we could apply to any unit, whether we wanted to manage for, if we wanted to manage to 19, it tells you you need to have this many permits to achieve that. And if you want to manage for 16 bucks and for 100, it tells you that you need to have this many permits. So we increase and decrease permits based on that formula. Okay, and this is basically how it played out. I've put all the units basically, they're first in alphabetical order, but also in order of highest objectives to lowest objectives. So, you know, you can see the Beaver, Fillmore, Oak Creek, the Pavant, the Camas, the Morgan Southwest, Chalk Creek, and East Canyon, Dutton, 9 Mile, and North Slope, and Ogden all fell into the 18 to 20. Even though some of those have a lot of private land on them, the folks in that region felt that they wanted them managed for a higher objective and were willing to take the cut and permits that requires. Similarly, the Plateau Fish Lake, the Thousand Lakes, Yellowstone, and the Southwest Desert and the Current Creek Wasatch Unit were all 18 to 20, also the Zion. And then after that come the units that are managed for 15 to 17, Box Elder, Cache, the Manti, the LaSalle, Monroe, Oker Stansberry, Caparowitz, San Juan, South Slope, the Wasatch West, and the Tinnick. I do have the permits there, and you should have them as well in your packet. So if you want to go back to any of them, we can. But I'll just kind of walk you through the summary of all of those permit numbers and basically where we're going. So if, as I mentioned earlier, our recommendation as it stands would require an amendment to the plan. But if the amendment to have two objectives for general season unit is not adopted, we could revert to the current plan, which says we'll manage for 18 to 25 on all units. So that's always an option, is the do-nothing option. So this is our recommendation, basically with that basically hybrid approach, 16 units managed for 18 to 20, and 14 units managed for 15 to 17. Given that scenario, we would have a total of 86,500 permits. That is a 500 permit reduction from last year. But keep in mind, last year we reduced 7,000 permits. So we were already well on our way into that 13,000 permit reduction that we thought it would take to get to 18 to 25. And given that we used a hybrid approach, we didn't have to cut that many permits. Not only did we use a hybrid approach, we also switched weapon types a little bit as well. So what we did is we actually used a 60-20-20 split. So 60% of the permits are in rifle, 20% are in archery, and 20% are in muzzleloader. So that actually bumped up the archery and muzzleloader permits a little bit because they usually tend to have a little bit lower success rate. That allowed us to have a few more permits because of that.
Last year?
Last year there was really no split. We had 16,000 archery permits that were statewide, and then the muzzleloader and rifle, you can see them there. They were drawn out of the same pool. This is how they played out last year. It was 13,000 muzzleloader and 58,000 rifle. So as you can see, this year it's 17,300 muzzleloader and 17,300 archery, and then 51,900 rifle hunters. Now that muzzleloader rifle split can change, used to be able to change because they were coming out of the same pool depending on demand, but now it's fixed. In any case, that adds up to $86,500, you know, with a 60-20-20 split. That's the same split that we use on our limited entry units, so we thought it was a good approach. It's not, you know, it is weighed a little bit heavy on the more primitive weapon types, but through surveys we've put out there, every time we renew our statewide plan, the public is willing to move permits into those primitive weapon types to gain opportunity. So we did that both to not cut as many permits and to reduce.
Anise, have you figured out or do you have an estimate of what the anticipated harvest will be as compared to, you know, with these changes compared to last year?
You know, harvest is going to be tricky because we've never harvested on that. But I imagine it will be similar to last year given the same number of permits. Success rates are not going to increase a whole lot. So we'll probably harvest with this number of permits between 18 and 19,000 bucks.
But what about the change to archery and muzzleloader? How
will it affect harvest? I think it will affect the harvest a little bit. It's not that big of a change just because last year we had 16,000 archers. This year is 17,000. So they'll harvest, that 1,000 permits will reduce harvest maybe by, 200-300. So it still will roughly be between 18 to 19,000 bucks harvested statewide. That's the reason we did it. I guess if we wanted to, we could maximize the number of permits by putting the majority of them in archery, but then you would have a disproportionate number of people putting in for all, you know, there's a lot more people put in for a rifle than any other weapon type, so we didn't want to force people to hunt other weapon types. Okay, so if the proposed objective mix is not adopted, as I mentioned, we could revert back to the original plan for 18 to 25 statewide, and this is what the permits would look like. Under that scenario, we would have 80,200 permits, so basically an additional, almost 7,000 permits cut from last year. And then those would play out that way, roughly 16,000 archery permits, 48,000 rifle, and roughly 16,000 muzzleloader. So if our recommendation is not adopted and you do decide to go back to the old objective, this is the number of permits that would be available. Okay, with this, going to unit by unit and archery permits going on unit by unit basis, we foresee some units not selling all the archery permits and maybe not all the muzzleloader permits. And to avoid loss of opportunity and revenue, we're recommending that remaining archery permits become available as muzzleloader permits on September 17th. So this is basically after the archery season is over. That way, if there are permits available, muzzleloaders can purchase them over the counter and still hunt that same unit. And similarly, if muzzleloader permits are available after the muzzleloader season closes, we would make those permits available as any weapon permits on October 9th. Now, there was initially some concern that, these other weapon types have higher success rate. But what would happen if there was a substantial amount of those going moving forward, you would see a higher harvest, and it should affect the buck to doe ratio, which would result in a reduction of total permits on that unit. So it would play out, it would fix itself over the long run if that's the case. And then if we see them all selling out again and then that buck to doe ratio increases, then we can increase permits again. So it's a way to not lose opportunity or revenue and maintain the buck-to-doe ratio where we need it. And that's the presentation for the general season. I'll just leave it there, and I'll take any questions if anyone has them.
Okay. First, I want to ask is, before we can act on any of this, do we have to act on the deer management plan?
No, I mean, if you accept our recommendation, you are automatically amending the management plan. If you do not accept our recommendations and modify them, however you modify them would modify the plan. And if you say we want them 18 to 25 statewide, the plan doesn't change. So anything you do is going to, either leave the plan alone or modify the plan, and we can make any modifications that you guys come up with if the board approves them.
Okay.
Denise, where are dedicated hunter tags in this?
Dedicated hunter tags come out of this total number. So basically, if you remember, the rule was amended, so each unit was limited to 15% that go to dedicated hunters. Of course, that doesn't take place for two more years till all the current dedicated hunters. Well, it does take place now for new dedicated hunters, but there's still some dedicated hunters that get to choose a unit, and that's still in place. But within 2 years, they'll only be 15% of any unit that are dedicated hunters. And that comes out of that total pot. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, one question. On this, to avoid the loss of opportunity, the remaining archery permits will become open, then the muzzleloader. Is the buck-to-doe ratio still on a three-year average?
It is, yeah.
And so before that, if there was a loss, it would take 3 years for that to come?
It would. And of course, if we see that being the effect, usually we don't just use a three-year average as a starting point. But if we see a declining trend, usually we will recommend a decrease in permits before it actually gets the three-year average. So, yeah, we would be looking at the data. Obviously, because this is a new thing, we're going to be watching it very closely. And if it does affect any unit, we would want to be pulling permits back quicker rather than waiting.
On the units that have the lower buck-doe ratio, the primarily public land units, some of those will have CWMUs on it. Is if we don't meet our buck doe ratio, are you going to revisit the CWMU as well and cut permits with them? Or
no, we would not, because as you know, CWMUs are their own unit and they can manage them differently if they so choose. I think the only restrictions on CWMUs is they cannot offer. I think it's more opportunity than or. Opportunity has to be similar to outside, so they're managing usually for a higher buck to doe ratio than the surrounding unit, and it's no difference than it was in the old plan. All units were 15-17 or 15-25, and CWMUs still managed the way they managed. So it shouldn't affect how the CWMUs manage at all on their buck harvest. It's because they're their own limited entry unit, basically. They don't fall into the general season framework.
But their deer are still biologically part of the whole herd unit. So
they are, yeah. And on units where, usually on units where that are predominated by CWMUs, we've taken that into consideration and made those the higher objective units rather than the lower one, because we know they're going to be higher regardless. You know, like the Morgan Southridge East Canyon complex, that we automatically put it in the high one. We didn't even raise permits on that because we knew it couldn't handle more hunters because of private land issues. So, yeah, there will be a few units that, if there's a large number of CWMUs on a unit, we try to make sure that landed in the higher objective. So those were some of the considerations that were given.
Are there any other questions? Go ahead, Travis.
How come we use a three-year average on this? How come we're not just using year to year now?
We've always used a three-year average, and the reason for that is so we're not yo-yoing with our permits. It basically keeps you on a more steady. And the worst thing you can do for wildlife management is, you know, have a ton of permits 1 year and then no permits the next year. And if you use a one-year objective, you would be doing that. If the objective drops, you would be reacting to that 1 year when it could have been a blip on the radar. And it's best to always have a three-year average to mitigate that, so you're not reacting on an annual basis on something that may or may not be a real problem.
Do you use a rolling three-year average?
Yes, so it's three. It's always the last 3 years.
How come we take a 10-year average on the hunters at all? Instead of it, this is a three-year to figure out the tag numbers for this.
We use a 10-year average, basically, so we had enough data so we could create that formula. Because the more data you have, the more realistic that data. We use three-year average we could use 10-year average, but you would hardly ever change permits if that were the case. So you want to be reactionary to what's happening on the unit, but you don't want to be so reactionary that permits are fluctuating year to year. That's the reason we use 3 years. The reason we use 10 years of data to come up with the formula is because this was the first year we were ever doing this, and we wanted to make sure that at a certain buck-to-doe ratio, what kind of permits are needed to maintain that that number of bucks in the unit. So I guess it's different things for we use different methodologies to achieve different results for different needs. We needed a long-term data set to come up with permit numbers for the first year. We don't need a long-term data set to tell us what's happening right now.
Any other questions from the RAC? Okay, we'll open it up to questions from the audience. Again, I ask everybody to keep it to questions right now, and we'll go to comments after you're done asking questions. No questions? Okay, we'll move on to comments. What's that? Okay, if I call your name and your comment is not for this particular segment of the Bucks and Bulls Once in a Lifetime, just tell me you want to reserve till we get to the other part of it. Lee Tracy? This is for general season deer is what the comment. Okay, very good. Randy Quayle.
My name is Randy Quayle. I'm speaking on behalf of the Utah Bowman's Association. The UBA applauds the efforts of the Wildlife Board and the Division of Wildlife Resources in their efforts to reconstruct the general season buck to doe ratio objectives. Over the last couple of years, we have seen that Utah's hunters are split almost evenly as to whether they want more trophy quality units versus more opportunity units. We believe that the DWR's recommendations reflect these views. Thus, the Utah Bowman's Association supports the DWR recommendations as presented.
Thank you. Jeremy Hansen.
Hello. My name is Jeremy Hansen with the United Wildlife Cooperative. We support the division's recommended big game tag allocations and ask that you do the same. As you consider buck-to-doe ratio objectives and the consequences, we ask that you keep a few things in mind. Hunter retention and recruitment is lower than it's ever been in Utah. Schools no longer close for the opening of the deer hunt, and many of our neighbors frown upon the idea of hunting in general. We urge you to be cautious about adopting a management strategy that further reduces hunting participation. We believe this to be counterproductive as it does nothing for the biological health of our herds and overall population numbers, and only hurts our sport and we lose more participants. The single largest group for prudent wildlife management is the hunting community. Reducing tags to increase buck-to-doe ratio only does a disservice to this group and undermine its long-term viability, whether the hunters themselves realize it or not. We have heard many times about the great hunting in Colorado. We hear about their high buck-to-doe ratios. What we don't hear about is since raising buck-to-doe ratios objectives to current levels back in 1999 and drastically cutting tags, the number of deer hunters that apply for deer tags in Colorado on an annual basis has been reduced by half, and overall deer numbers have not improved. In fact, populations continue to decline in many portions of the state, and they continue to search for answers just as we do. They also have many hunters that are dissatisfied with their management plans and are calling for higher buck-to-doe ratios and deeper tag cuts just as we do. We hear some hunters that say they would prefer to sit out several years just so they could finally draw a tag. They have a chance to harvest a mature buck. But we already have those hunts in Utah for they're called limited entry units. The complaint then becomes the wait is too long. It seems we want our cake and eat it too sometimes. As this trend continues in Utah and across the West, we will continue to see our hunting heritage come under fire, and it too may become extinct as we lose more of our hunting constituency. We urge to keep our general units as opportunity friendly as possible so that our youth can stay involved and be able to draw tags on a regular basis so their family can continue to hunt together as much as possible. Thanks for your time and your service to Utah's wildlife and our hunting heritage. Thank you.
Thanks. Chad Kulo.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Chad Kulo. I represent the Carbon Emory SFW chapter. First of all, we are representing the sportsmen, and we appreciate that everything that the division does. We do agree with a lot of the things presented here today, and I haven't put like a talk together. I'm just going to kind of speak off the tip of my tongue on a few things. A lot of people know our voice on this, but the division has recommended 15 to 17 years on the buck to doe ratio for our area here. We have a different recommendation. We don't agree with that. And we don't agree with the 18 to 25. That's way too broad. That doesn't narrow us down to manage what we need to manage. We want to recommend 18 to 20 to be our buck to doe ratio. And I think the most important thing to point out, and it's been brought to the table, is that does not take away opportunity whatsoever. We talked about numbers last night. That cuts 400 to 700. We didn't know the exact number. It's somewhere, we're at 8,800 tags right now. That would cut it to 8,100 to 8,400 to get that objective to 18 to 20. That's not a loss of opportunity whatsoever. That's very, very minimal to get our deer to where we need to be. SFW has worked very hard. The Deer Recovery Act, a lot of things with the division. We want to bring our deer back. A lot of the hunters that hunt here, and you can say it's 50-50, 60-40, the different opinions on opportunity or trophy. Our chapter here, we live here, we see the deer, we know what's happened to the deer. We're not coming from 100 or 200 miles away and just for an opportunity. We see what's happened to our deer. We want to bring our deer back, and we feel that if it's 8,100 to 8,400 permits and 18 to 20 on our buck to doe, we recommend that. We think that is what is right. I have one other recommendation, and that is on the unsold deer permits. We don't want to see those unsold deer permits turn into a muzzleloader permit. There's not a loss of opportunity. Anybody can archery hunt. The opportunity is still there. If a guy wants to have a weapon and be out on the mountain, the opportunity is still there. So we strongly recommend that in order to bring our deer back, make our Deer Recovery Act, put it into place, make it work the way we want, and to bring that opportunity back. With the deer numbers going up, the opportunity comes back. And if we're going to act on it, we need to act on it now. And that's our recommendation, is those 2 points. Anybody else from Carbon Emory? Do you guys have any other things that I missed? Okay, thank you for your time.
Chad, a quick question. Was that 18 to 20? That was for every unit in the region?
No, just for the Manti.
Just the Manti.
Yeah, I'm just speaking just for our Carbon Emory, just for the Manti.
Okay.
Not in general, just to, I guess the word I'm looking for is just to modify the Manti from 15 to 17 to that 18 to 20.
Okay, thank you. Is it Paul Pace, Henry Mountains Grazers?
I defer for the bison.
Very good. Kaylin Cowley.
It's actually Calvin. You got it wrong last time too, but it's okay.
Sorry.
First off, I want to apologize to anybody I offend. I'm very opinionated. First off, people that say opportunity for the people that's hunting, I got probably 10 years before my kid gets to hunting age, and I want to get my kid involved. I will give up my tag for my kid to get involved. And for somebody to say, we're doing it for father, son, but the father should be more concerned about his kid hunting instead of himself. So that being said, I think the recommendation for dropping the tag numbers down is good. I want to see my kid hunt. I want to see other kids hunt. And for, just like Chad said, I also support that for the not selling the archery tags. Archery is getting really big. There's more and more archery hunters every year. And I don't know about you, but I killed a 4-point buck at 85 yards. It's not hard to shoot a long or a compound at 100 yards as long as you practice. So there's really no difference of opportunity for someone to pick up a muzzleloader to an archery. If you're good with a bow, you can kill easily at a good distance. So that's all I have to say. And I'd like you to hold on to my thing because I have more for the later.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bart Kettle.
Bart Kettle, I'm just representing myself as a sportsman. I guess the first thing I'd comment is it seems like we've been almost a millennium getting to this point on our deer hunting structure. And I'm saying deer hunting structure because what we're doing here is allocating buck permits and has very little to do with the biological aspects of the deer herd. It is a hunting structure only. It's not going to affect every variable of the deer herd. That being said, I've struggled long and hard, seems like several years, with what I really want out of this and what I think is best. I think I'm probably like most people. I have some reservations about some of the things that's proposed. I like some of them. That being said, I think that what the division's given is probably pretty close to center ground. I think we can all find some things we dislike. I think we can all find some things that we like. I support the recommendations. I'm a little unsure about the unsold thing. I see the perks to it. I also see some negatives, but as a whole, I think I'm going to encourage the RAC to support the division's recommendations. Thank you.
Troy Justison.
Troy Justison, Sportsman, Fishing, and Wildlife. I'd just like to comment on one thing that was brought up here is kind of new to us, is to avoid loss of opportunity. We'd be opposed to that. We'd recommend that the RAC recommend to the Wildlife Board that those permits stay within the classification, whether it be archery, muzzleloader, or rifle. The opportunity is there if people want to take it, go hunt with a bow or muzzleloader. And so if those permits go unsold, that's the way it is. We would recommend that we stay at those numbers that are committed to those. Thank you.
And you were speaking for the statewide SFW?
Yes.
Thanks. Shaley?
Shane.
Shane. Sorry, Shane. Get a haircut, Shane.
I was going to say, I think you just did.
I just did. I lost a lot of them. Shane Thompson, I am with the SFW also in this chapter, and you guys all know me. But talking about the opportunity, just on a personal note, is I am one that really wants opportunity, but when I take my child out there, and I haven't done it for the last 2 years with my daughter, and just drug her through to even find her a buck. She don't even care if she wants to go hunting. It's too much work. It's hard. I mean, the opportunity when we fix our deer herd comes with numbers. And I'm not talking trophy bucks or whatever. We got to get our deer herd back, and all this goes away. And the faster we do that, the faster we're going to have opportunity for our youth, too. And I strongly support keeping these buck to doe ratios at 18 to 20 to bring that back faster. And we can always add permits later on. The quicker we can bring it back, the better for our youth. And it's been a long time coming. I think this is a fair presentation from the fishing game, but I just want to get aggressive. I like results, quicker results, the better, I think, in my eyes. And I'd just like to see it back to where even 10 years ago with my son had the same situation. We had a lot more opportunity then. We're still on a downward trend, and we got to turn that around as quick as we can. And by getting aggressive, I think we stay that road, and everybody bites a bullet, and opportunity will come back. And if these guys that just want opportunity and don't care about the deer herd, that's a concern to me, because we got to be concerned about it. And I understand opportunity. It's fun. We don't have to all have a tag in our hand to go out in the field. there can be two or three in the party and everybody can still go enjoy it, and we take care of our resource, and that's our deer herd. And it has been down for so long. I want to see some real aggressive stuff to bring it back and do all we can. So my recommendation is to stay with statewide, and let's get general population back as soon as we can. Thanks.
That's all the comment cards I have that address deer. Did I miss anybody that wanted to speak to the deer? Okay, at this point in time, then we're going to close public comment and open it up amongst the RAC members to discuss what they've just heard between the division and the public.
I pulled up 2010's general season subunit, and they had hunters of field buck harvested data. And on the San Juan in 2010, they had 1,300 rifle permits. For the muzzleloader, they had 424 permits. And on the archery, they had 402 permits. This about equals about 1,800 tags. And their recommendation under this plan is 2,500 tags altogether. And if they went to the 18 bucks per 100 does, it was 2,100 tags. So it's still an increase of 18 bucks per 100 does. So I would want, if we go change it, that we adapt the San Juan unit to the 18 to 20 bucks per 100 does, just because that's an extra. It's going to be 300 more permits even under that plan.
That's the 18 to 20 or the
18 to 23? 18 to 20, there's 2,100 permits proposed. If it's 15 to 17, it's 2,500 permits proposed. So either one's an increase. It's either an increase of 300 permits or an increase of 700 permits. Right. So,
I just wondered, the 18 to 20 is what the SFW just brought. The division's high end was 18 to 23, wasn't it?
Ours is 18 to 20.
Our
recommendation, the plan that currently exists is 18 to 25. So, okay. But the numbers here, yeah, even if you went 18 to 20, it would be the same numbers.
Okay. So if we adapt this plan, I would, you know, if we don't go with the Wildlife Board's 18 to 25, if we go to the division's plan, that I would suggest we put the San Juan under the 18 to 20 instead of the 15 to 17, just because that's still an increase of tags regardless. So.
Okay. Kevin?
One of the things I noticed as Anise went through his proposal is, and correct me if I'm wrong, I believe there's 16 of the units that are to be 18 to 20 statewide, 14 of those units to be 15 to 17 statewide. But if you look at the southern region, it's one unit 18 to 20 out of four. It's only, it's higher than 50% statewide what those 18 to 20 units are. Yet in the southeastern region, it's 25%. But really, if you look at the private land and the access in that, it's probably actually quite a bit lower than that because of the amount of people that can get to that unit.
Anybody else have anything you want to discuss?
Very well covered.
What was the reasoning behind these unsold tags? I mean, was it revenue driven, or was it?
It's both revenue and opportunity driven. So basically, you know, we realize that currently we sell all our archery permits, but we realize when we go to unit by unit because archers in the past could hunt statewide. Now that they'll be limited to certain units, there will be, from our data, we know that certain units don't have that proportion of archers in them. We believe they'll all sell. And the reason I say that is a lot of folks will buy those archery tags just to hunt the extended archery units, not to hunt those units that they may draw them on, because if you do draw an archery tag, you can hunt any of the extended units. So, but yeah, it's basically a way to ensure that because we're going to a new system, we don't know how many permits may go unsold. Part of it is revenue driven, and part of it
so
is...
So there's an incentive there to get people to buy those tags.
Right.
That's what
exactly.
You're looking for.
Yep. And really, by making them no longer available after the archery season ends, is going to encourage archers to buy them before the archery season ends so they can hunt the extended areas. So we're incentivizing them to go in the archery season. But if they don't for some reason, and I don't see a large number of permits going this route, but just in case there are. So that's the rationale.
Thank you.
Okay, so I see two basic issues came up. The buck-doe ratio, specifically on two units, the Manti Santa Fe unit requested a difference from the division recommendation, and Travis wants to see the San Juan also be bumped into that higher buck-doe ratio. And the other one is the how to handle the unsold deer permits. If there's no further discussion, I suggest we entertain for a motion either breaking those up or make sure you include both those items, how you want to see that handled.
Would you like just
yeah, that might be a good idea. Justin or Anise, could if we switch those two units to the 18 to 20, what would the total number of deer tags in the southeast region, what would it be decreased to?
You're talking the San Juan specifically? Or
San Juan and the Manti Central.
Central Mountains Manti would go from 8,800 to 7,500, and then the San Juan would go from 2,500 to 2,100 permits.
There is a, in your packet.
Do the math quick. What's the total number of reduction in tags?
You've got 1,700, is that right?
1,700
less permits.
With bulk.
Yeah, if you cut bulk. Can I speak to the San Juan thing real quick?
Sure.
We did meet with the local sportsmen down there in Moab and representatives from San Juan County, and we had a pretty candid discussion with them about what they wanted to do, and it was unanimous that they wanted 15 to 17, so I just thought the RAC should keep that in mind. And as far as the lower numbers... And
how many sportsmen were there at that meeting?
There was representatives from SFW, UWC, the... Moab didn't really have one. The Elk Foundation came, and then local sportsmen from Moab. So we tried to represent everybody we could sportsman-wise.
What's the trend of that population? It must be on an upward trend if they had fewer tags in 2010 than you guys are recommending for now.
Well, 2010 is kind of an anomaly. You'll remember with the LaSalle's, we had to do five-day hunts back in 2008 and 2009.
This is the San Juan. Right?
I know. I get that, but it's related because what happened when we did that five-day hunt midweek opener, you had people flooding to the San Juan, and then they would, once we opened the LaSalle's back up to a regular hunt, they flooded back to there. And so, you know, 2008, 2009, we did have 2,500, 2,600 hunters on the San Juan. But then that next year when we opened up the LaSalle's, everybody hunted over there. So that's why the long-term data on total harvest, or total number of hunters is what we were looking at, because that was just a mess, trying to make sense of it.
What percent of objective are we on those two units, the Manti and the San Juan?
In relation to their population objective?
Right.
Manti were probably just over half. Guy, where are we at on San Juan? 80%, roughly.
So good conditions, we could be at objective in 1 or 2 years.
Yeah, and we're probably doing better on the Abajos than we are the Elk Ridge side of that. But yeah, so. Just for clarification, though.
And for clarification on the SFW meeting, when he went to that, it was represented by one member. I'm on the same board, and he brought it back. And on the 9 members on the board, was in agreement with me. So,
the San Juan SFW group wants, they definitely want to see the higher buckdo region.
Right.
Anybody want to take a stab at a motion?
Let's get the ball rolling. Let's go. I'd like to make a motion that we. Okay, I got word this, that we take those 3 units.
Two.
Is it
2 units?
I thought it was 2. 3. There's just 2. Okay, 18 to 20 would be the Manti or
the
Manti and the San Juan to 18 to 20. And move them to 18 to 20 and leave it at that for now.
Okay.
Does that sum it up? Am I missing something?
And accept the rest of the proposal as it is.
Right.
Sure. Okay.
If that's okay, you can leave the unsold tags as the division presented. Is that your...
I don't know how to feel about those yet. But any comment on that? Any help? Can we just leave it at that for now?
Yep, we can.
He just seconded my motion.
Okay. So we have a motion to increase the buck-doe ratio from the lower buck-doe ratio to the higher one of 18 and 20 for the Manti Santa Fe unit and the San Juan unit. It was moved by Charlie, seconded by Travis.
By
Jeff. Sorry. Bad day for me, huh? all those in favor?
I can't get that for you. It's changed, though.
All those opposed? It's unanimous.
Oops.
One.
We got two.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
That's Sue.
Yeah.
Strike 3 and I'm out. Promise.
You're doing good, Derek.
Okay. Unless somebody wants to take on the unsold deer permits, we'll assume that the RAC wants to see them stay as presented by the division.
I do believe it's already voted on because they took the rest of the...
Yeah, I guess. Okay, let's move on.
Okay. So next on the agenda is the premium limited entry deer permits. So I'll present you first with some data from the 09 to 11, and I'll explain how we set permits on premium limited entry units. As you may be aware, on premium limited entry units, we have 2 types of permits, what we call premium permits and what we call management buck permits. The premium permits are set on an objective of achieving 40 to 55% of the harvest being 5 years of age or older. So those harvested bucks, our teeth are pulled and we age them. And we want to reach an objective of 40 to 55% of those bucks being 5 years or older on a 3-year average. I've color-coded these. So the ones in green basically mean that we could increase permits. The ones in yellow means we could stay status quo or cut permits, depending on where we are on the objective. So what this shows us is on the Henry Mountains, given the 3-year average, we could increase permits on the Henry Mountains. Similarly, on the management buck permits, we manage those to 40 to 50 bucks per 100 does. So basically, if we rise above 50 bucks per 100 does, we can issue more management buck permits to bring it down below 50. And then again, on the Henry Mountains, we could increase management buck permits if the region chose. So here's what our recommendation is. Sorry, you can't see the bottom of it.
Okay, so on the Henry Mountains, we are recommending a 4-permit increase. That is 10%. In the statewide plan, it also states that we could never increase permits by more than 10%, and that's what we're recommending, a 10% increase, which would be 4 permits. The Ponsagon is within objective. We're not recommending any increases on the premium permits on that unit. On management buck permits, we're not recommending any increases on the Henry Mountains. The feeling of the region is that we are increasing a few permits on the premium side, and they feel that there may be some crowding issues as well on that management buck hunt. They want to try an approach next year, maybe splitting that up. I'm not sure how that exactly will work, but at least for this year, they're going to maintain that 30 permits on the management buck hunt. And on the Ponsagon, they're actually recommending reducing their permits. They're starting to come within objective, so they're recommending cutting back from 75 management bucks to 50. So that's our premium limited entry recommendations. I'll move to the limited entry deer recommendations. Basically, those units are managed for an objective of 25 to 35 bucks per 100 does postseason on a 3-year average. As you can see with the color-coded there, there's 3 units that could possibly have an increase in permits. I think there were slight increases in permits recommended, nothing major. The book list stayed the same. The Diamond Mountain stayed the same, and the rest stayed the same as well. I think there was a slight increase in permits on San Juan. Given that, actually, that and then also the Thousand Lakes being pulled out as a limited entry unit actually decreased overall limited entry permits from last year. So last year we had 986. This year we're recommending 967 total limited entry permits. Okay, with that I'll start with the elk recommendations. This is for both general season and limited entry elk permits. We'll start with general season. The statewide plan calls for spike permits to remain at 15,000, which they are currently, as long as hunt success rate remains below 20%. Our current success rate is at 13, our statewide success rate, so we recommend maintaining that number of 15,000 spike permits statewide. We also are recommending no change to the general season, any bull permit numbers, with one exception. Basically, they will remain 14,300 any bull units and 300 youth any bull units. The only increase we're recommending is on that one small unit in the northeastern region in that vernal subunit where they have a youth hunt late in the season. They've increased the area for that hunt, and they're recommending 5 more permits basically to take advantage of that increased area and then to give a little bit more opportunity for youth. So they're recommending an increase from 15 to 20 permits. Okay, moving to limited entry elk permits. Basically, the overall picture is a slight decrease in total permits from 2989 last year to 2956 this year. Although when you look at the recommendations, there were some reductions on some units and some increases on other units that kind of, it looks like no change, but there is actually quite a bit of change, and I'll go through that fairly quickly. So here are the units that are managed for the highest ages of bulls in the harvest. And as you can see, most of those are either right at the bottom end of the objective or below objective. So we recommended reductions on all those units with a total of 51 permits being reduced on those units as a whole. The second tier of age objectives, this is where we manage for 6.5 to 7-year-old bull in the harvest. All but one require a slight reduction, and you see that there with 22 permit reduction on those units. Okay, and this is the bulk of the units which we manage for 5.5 to 6-year-old bull in the harvest. These units primarily hold probably the majority of the elk in the state. Most of those are either within objective, a lot of them are above objective, so those on the whole we're recommending a total of 20 permit increase on those units. And the majority of those come in the Manti and the Wasatch Mountains.
Can you go back to that one? On the low like the Plateau Fish Lake, they're 6'5", we're reducing 20. Wasatch 6'7", we're going up 50.
Mm-hmm.
Why the...
So the Fish Lake is one where they're anticipating an increase in objective, and with that an increase in the statewide plan, with that increase in objective comes an increase in age objective as well.
Okay.
So if that happens, we didn't want to fall behind. It's a lot harder to catch up with age than it is to bring it down.
Okay.
I'm speaking more to the increase of objective. What does that mean?
Well, as you know, the statewide, the unit plans are coming up next year, next RAC meetings.
Oh.
And then so that they have had committee meetings, and they're going to be recommending an increase in population objective. And then the statewide plan, it states that if we increase the population objective by so much, we would also increase the age objective on that same unit, just for that unit specifically. And then these are this group of units is where we manage for the lowest age objective, 4.5 to 5. As you can see, the green color coded, those all could have increases in permits, and we're recommending 35 permit increase on those. So given that, you know, some decreases, some increases overall, a slight decrease in overall permits for limited entry elk. Okay, moving to pronghorn recommendations. We're recommending a slight increase in permits for pronghorn. Majority of those increases are on the plateau and on the Ridge County portion, where we have population on the Ridge County that's increasing. So not a major increase, but there are a few more permits for pronghorn. Once-in-a-lifetime permits. Moose, we're recommending a decrease in permits. We have a few units that are struggling reaching the age objectives we have on moose. Our moose populations in the state are not doing great. They're fairly stagnant, with some populations showing a slight decline. We do plan to initiate some research to look at why that is exactly. But for now, we're just going to manage according to the plan, and that caused us to reduce permits at this time. For bison, we're recommending an increase from last year, but I need to caution, included in this is the new hunt on the Bookcliffs, which has 4 permits in it, so the total increases in all on the Henry Mountains, total of 60 permits are recommended. 4 of those will be on the Bookcliffs unit. Basically, you know, we've gotten to the point where we're trying to maintain an objective, so we need to increase permits. We're no longer in a growth mode on that unit. Desert bighorn sheep, recommending a slight decrease in permits. The majority of those are on the San Rafael and associated units, where we're seeing a decline in sheep population. We do have a pretty good increase on the Zion unit, although a total decline in desert units. Some units are doing better than others. Rocky Mountain bighorn, a slight increase in permits of 4 from 30 to 34. And then Rocky Mountain goat, a pretty good increase. Most of those increases are coming on the Willard and the Beaver unit, where we have populations that are really growing rapidly for goats. Okay. Some of the rule changes that we will be recommending. This one deals with muzzleloader hunting. Basically, currently, we do not allow black powder that contains nitrocellulose to be sold. And there is a new product out on the market that's called Blackhorn 209 that contains nitrocellulose. So our law enforcement, looked into this and basically the research that shows that it only increases velocity by an average of 5%, and they didn't feel that gave them, that much of an advantage. It is also cleaner burning, so it requires less cleaning of a muzzleloader. They didn't see any downside to that as well. So they basically struck out the nitrocellulose-based part of the black powder designation, which allows people now to use Blackhorn 209 in their muzzleloaders. You still cannot use smokeless powder. You still have to use black powder, but now you can use black powder that is nitrocellulose-based. The second change or recommendation is basically the use of dogs. We're recommending adding to our rule
that you can use one blood trailing dog controlled by a leash during lawful hunting hours and within 72 hours of shooting a big animal, basically to track it. So if you wound an animal, in the past you were not allowed to trail it with a dog. Now we've put this rule in place. It has to be on a leash and basically has to be within 72 hours of shooting the animal. Go ahead.
Does a DWR need to be contacted before that's initiated?
No, it's not. I mean, as long as you can show, you know, if you are contacted, that you can show that you're, you know, tracking an animal and your dog's on a leash, it should not be an issue. This is similar language to the rule that they have in Idaho. They have the same law there, and one of our board members asked us to look into it, and law enforcement didn't see an issue with it. So they amended the rule, recommending amending the rule to do that.
Is this intended to track down a wounded animal that's still alive? I mean, is it allowed?
Either still alive or dead.
Packing a firearm while you're tracking.
Yes, that's why it says it has to be during lawful hunting hours and within 72 hours of the.
Okay. And if it's wounded the last day of the hunt, can you? I mean. I guess you're out of the season, so it's no longer lawful hunting hours. Is that
right?
So
I guess that's how it would be. I'm not sure how that would be interpreted, to be honest. If there are some law enforcement folks here that want to try to tackle that, I'd be glad to fund it. Anyone? I guess we can get some clarification on that. But okay. I guess if you were following to the strictest parts of the rule, if once the season's over, you're no longer lawful hunting hours, so. It would mean that you're pretty much done.
Okay. So it's not meant to be able to
extend a season.
Or
I don't believe
even
that
find
was
a wounded trophy that is likely dead.
Yeah, I don't believe that was the intent of the law.
I would assume that after the season, you would still have the opportunity, if you wounded something, that you could contact one of our officers and they could go with you.
Yeah, then that's always been the case. Yes. Okay, the other rule amendments that we're recommending is to allow hunters that have two antlerless elk permits for the same area but for different seasons to harvest those in the same season. We had this issue happen last year where a hunter contacted us. He had drawn a tag on a unit and bought one over the counter, but they were for two different seasons on the same unit. And he was asking us if he could hunt them both on one season. And to me, it seemed like a no-brainer, and I said, yeah, but then when I contacted our law enforcement to check on it, they said no, and the rule it says it's not legal. So we asked them if we could amend the rule to make that legal. It just makes sense. If you have two tags for the same unit where we want elk harvested, it makes sense that they can harvest them if they see two together at the same time. So that's what that rule amendment allows a hunter to do. And with that, I thank you, and glad to take any questions.
Hey, is there any questions from the RAC to the division?
Is there any thing in the process of making more management buck tags on some of these limited entry units, like you have on the Henrys and the Pontagon, like getting it on the Elk?
There is not currently any plans to do that. There was a recommendation by the board to look at doing that on the booklifts unit, but we would not even look at that until the statewide plan is up for renewal in another year and a half or two. The reason we do not recommend it is the only reason we use management buck permits is to reduce buck doe ratio on units where we're harvesting so few animals. That is not needed currently on limited entry units because we do maintain our buck to doe ratio by the number we harvest. So it would have to be something out of the ordinary to be able to do it. You couldn't just issue permits. You'd have to be a mechanism to control how many permits we put on it. And, that mechanism is not currently in place.
Any other questions from the RAC? Any questions from the audience? Go ahead, Troy.
Denise, can you clarify on the Henry Mountains where those four additional permits are going? Are they all rifle, archery, muzzleloader?
Yeah, they'll just be split through all the weapon types, 60, 20, 20. I can...
One on archery.
Yeah, two of one.
Two rifles.
And also, just kind of refreshers, maybe Justin, you can come up and just... If you can describe to us how you come to a permit number recommendations for, like, elk and the manti and that, what the procedure is how you come up with that number.
Yeah. So it's just looking at, again, a three-year average on age data and going through and figuring out, are we above, are we below, and adjusting permits accordingly on it. And with the manti in particular, I imagine, are you talking just in general, or do you have a specific?
Yeah,
so it's just... We look at two things. One is the trend, and one is the three-year average. And so if we're still above the three-year average and the trend's headed down, we will increase, but not substantially, and vice versa. I mean, if our trend's going up, but we're still below, we'll adjust accordingly. So looking on a three-year average, though, of age.
Any other questions in public? Come up, Kaylin.
I was just wondering, on the north, you said you're decreasing. How many tags are they actually decreasing there? And just out of curiosity, well,
I'm not sure which is what you're talking about.
North Center Fell for the sheep.
Two.
Yes. We're
reducing
two on the north and one on the south. Yeah.
Okay. And that, what's the total on that then? No, I mean, I know I'm from every county, but damn.
You got to carry the one. No, it's going from 5 to 3 on the north, like 9 to 8 on the south. And we would have done all the cuts on the north, but the out-of-state hunter can hunt the north and the south. And so there was a permit for that, a permit for a non-resident conservation permit, and then we wanted one for the public. So that's why.
Okay. 5 to 3
on the north.
And can it support three?
Well, yeah, I mean, it can. We have the rams there to do it, but that's a unit that we're very concerned about. We're having a research project going on right now and really trying to figure out what the limiting factors are there.
Okay. And
usually the out-of-state hunter contacts us, and we will encourage them to hunt this out. So.
All right, thanks.
Come on.
Kind of discuss this, but I just what percentage of the harvest tooth do you guys cut on to manage the bull age?
So it does vary. He asked the question, what percentage of the tooth do we get back of the bulls that are harvested? It varies annually. It has varied from 50 to 80. Last year it was about 76% return of the harvested animals.
In the harvest survey, is there a trend of quality going down on the manti? Do you guys address that at all? Or
You know what? We don't address quality because we assume that's built into the ages. Yeah, when you are managing for a 5.5 to 6-year-old bull, you're assuming that's not going to be the highest quality bull. So I do see that a trend of a declining antler size, I guess, in the harvest. But that's not something that was unexpected. I guess we did expect to see that. So, yeah, we are seeing a trend of smaller bulls, but that's what you would expect if you're trying to harvest more bulls.
Is there a reason we can't look towards cutting more teeth to get more accurate age data on that?
I mean, the only way you could is to make it mandatory, and it's really problematic to do that for several reasons. One reason is only those who harvest have to turn them in. So what you would end up doing is people that may have left the lower jaw on the mountain are going to lie on their harvest report if they don't turn them in, if there's a big – they can't put in for the hunt next year. So we would rather actually have a better harvest reporting than the ages. And 75 to 80% return to us is a great return. And we do look at the data that those that didn't send their teeth in and do look at the antler measurements, because they're supposed to send antler measurements and compare those that sent us teeth versus those that didn't send us teeth, how are they bigger animals? And there was no statistical difference between the two. So we feel very comfortable with our ages, getting 75% and then checking that against those that didn't send them in. Because we do get the argument that it's often those that get smaller bulls that don't send in their teeth, but that doesn't prove to be the case looking at the antler measurement data. But yeah, I mean, we try to incentivize people to send in their teeth. We've done, you know, if you send in your teeth, you're put into a drawing, those type of things. So we're providing incentives. We want more people to send teeth in, but short of making it mandatory, there's really no way to do it. And making it mandatory is really problematic because you have to, you know, you have to make sure that when they mail it in, it gets to you. They could just say, we lost it in the mail. So you have to have certified mail. You have to have several reminders, which brings the cost up and up and up. And we feel, you know, with the return we're getting now, it's sufficient to make decisions that we need to make.
Any other questions? Okay, let's go ahead to public comments. Kaylin, did you have anything you want to comment on this segment?
Callan.
I thought I screwed up on Callie, but it was Callan I screwed up.
Most people call me something else, so it's okay. Yeah, I know, like I said, I don't want to offend anybody or anything, DWR. Sorry, I know I throw you out in the street every once in a while, but you were saying, okay, he's not here. Well, the one guy was saying that it's kind of problematic. Well, when I killed my sheep, I had to cut its liver out, I had to stick it in a baggie, I had to take blood, I had to do all sorts of stuff to bring back on my harvest. And you know, I would not think it would be too hard if you're taking it to the butcher. My buddy's a butcher. He flat out cuts out the teeth, takes them out. You know, he could easily say, you want me to, you know, give these to DWR when they come by. That's one concern that I would like to see addressed. Others would be the manti increase. I actually would not like to see that increase. If anything, no increase this year, even go back to 2010. Me, myself, and like I said, I don't want to offend anybody. I don't know how many of the rack actually gets out and like looks it out and hikes around. I know I don't look like a hike, but I really do. I've seen a real decrease in size, and I think that's just because, you know, we're killing off too many bulls on the manti and the surrounding areas. In my opinion, it would be better for them teeth to come in so you could actually see. Me and my buddy, we're taxidermists. We see a lot of bulls that come in off the manti. This year, we did not get one bull over 320. And we probably got 30 bulls. So in 2010, we got 6 bulls over 350. And the majority of them was right there between 300 and 330. And I think we got 7 that was under the 300 mark. So just for me personally, we have seen a decrease in bull size. So I would like to address that, no increase on the manti. So thank you.
Thanks. Paul Pace.
As a member of the Henry Mountain Grazing Association and of the working group, we stand completely behind the recommendation, and we thank everyone that's helped on the Henry Mountain Bison Study. We think that we've acquired a lot of good information, and we appreciate working together with everyone. So that's our recommendation, just to stay with the numbers.
Thank you. That's a first.
Write that down.
I did. I got it down. Lee Tracy? I'll see. Yours on the antler list, right?
Well, I'll speak that.
All right. You can do both. We'll let you.
Lee Tracy, United Wildlife Cooperative. The United Wildlife Cooperative supports the division's recommendations for the 2012 limited entry and premium limited entry buck deer, bull elk, pronghorn buck, and once-in-a-lifetime permit numbers, and also the rule changes. And we appreciate the work that you guys do to sort all of this stuff out. You've heard a lot of different opinions, and we appreciate you making decisions.
David Brinkerhoff.
David Brinkerhoff, Henry Mountain Grazers. This is probably a first, Bill, for us to come up here and agree with the program. I'd just like to comment a little bit about the working committee. I think it's helped us a lot solve some of the issues that we're concerned with and what the DWR's concerned. I think it's made a difference in our attitude. I think it's improving. And as long as there's no surprises when we come out of those groups, I think it makes a lot of difference with both sides. There's one concern that I have for this year. I'm in favor with the recommendations as they've come up with, but there's one concern. I'm on the Henry's year on winter and summer both, and what I've seen this year is there's a drought in that part of the world, and it's pretty serious if you look at it. So there might be something happen maybe later on in the fall, and I think there's a program that's built in to where there, if there is concerns, then I think the DWR has got a program there that will address maybe if we need to take extra buffalo off. So that's probably about all I need to talk about. And I know this is not on the record, but you talked about the deer herd increase on the Henrys. You need to be careful right there on your hunters, because what I've seen this year, just riding through the desert, tending livestock, the coyotes are on the increase. There's a lot more coyotes this year, and that will affect the deer herd. So, thank you.
Eric Luke. Okay. Carrie Larson.
I'm going to talk, I guess, add my two cents about the age on the elk and the teeth, and the maybe the mandatory possibility of age date and all these elk. He says that the average that they collected, I think, is 75% to 80% of the teeth. So if the way I do math, and I went to Emory High, graduated there, but if you've got 75% of the bulls are 6 years old, and the other 25% that aren't turned in there are 2-year-old bulls, which we know a lot of the a lot of guys are killing the younger bulls because they want to harvest. What is the average if you throw those other 25% in at 2-year-old bulls, and why not a mandatory pull a tooth out and turn it in? I mean, how hard can that be to pull a tooth out of an elk and turn it in? If you know that's part of the requirement when you get the tag, that's mandatory tooth. And then we got 100%, and then that 6.1 that we're barely managing for, it's, I don't think it's going to be 6.1. I think it's going to be more like 5.1. So increase on the manti elk, I don't think would go up this year. I think it'd be going down again.
Okay. Carrie, did you hear what Anise talked about earlier on that, or were you? I think it's worth having Anise repeat that, okay. just so that you see the division side of it.
Yeah. So your concern was that those that are shooting younger bulls are not turning their teeth in. What I indicated earlier is that we do look at that. Everyone has to turn in a harvest report.
that harvest an animal. So what we do is we look at those that turned in a harvest report, but they're not turned in a tooth. And then with those harvest reports, they have to give us antler measurements. And we compared the antler measurements of those that did turn in teeth and those antler measurements of those that did not turn in teeth, and statistically they were no different. So the argument that those that are shooting younger bulls are not turning them in is not a good argument, because the data does not show that. Reporting on harvest, yes, we are getting, well, as close to 100% as you can. There's always a few that we have to say you can't put in for the hunt. But we're not getting 100% tooth return, because it's not mandatory. Harvest reporting is mandatory. Tooth return is not mandatory. So to check exactly what you're worried about, that those that are shooting younger bulls are not turning their teeth in, we look at the harvest report where they have to measure the antlers and compared antler measurements between those that did turn in their teeth and those that did not turn in their teeth, and statistically they're no different. So it negates the argument that the ones that are shooting younger bulls are not turning in their teeth. And that's how we can justify not having mandatory reporting. It seems easy to say that, yeah, make them do it, but because we're a state agency, we have to give them notice. We have to, and it, the cost ends up being more than the value we get out of the teeth that we get.
And also, what a big complicating factor is, what if somebody's tooth gets lost in the mail? We don't go around and collect these. They have to return them to us. And they can say, well, we put it in the mail and it was lost. And how do we prove that? And so how do you deny somebody a chance to apply if their tooth was lost in the mail? So from a legal standpoint, we've been told that we can't require that.
Okay, that's all the comment cards I have. Does anybody, Troy, you want to speak again? Go ahead. I put yours on. I threw yours on the other pile.
A few things here. First off, on behalf of Sportsman Fish and Wildlife, we'd like to support the recommendation on the division with the Henry Mountains with the increase in permits. The statewide board voted to that. We'd also like to support the ability to use a dog and trying to retrieve game. Our biggest concern lies with the manti on the elk, and I handed out a sheet, actually two sheets to everybody, and kind of goes through and gives you the last 3 years of the manti. Currently, last year we were 6.1. Our age objective is 5.7. In 2009, we had 360 permits. And now the recommendation is 482. If you look at the rate of decline of where we're coming down, our fear is we're getting so close to that age objective that with the increase in permits and the number of permits, we're going to dramatically overshoot that and be under. And then we're going to be back here next year saying, hey, we got to really cut permits dramatically to get back to that age objective. And you can kind of see the rate of descent there is coming down. What we'd like to do is be proactive and reduce and ask for a reduction in permits since we're getting close to the runway, slow down our descent, kind of level out to hit that objective, and so we don't shoot past it. So we'd recommend that we have a reduction of permits at a minimum to go back to 360 permits like we had in 2009 and possibly down to 320 permits. We believe that based upon the division's numbers and tracking this trend, that those reductions are justified. Kind of example of it is the second page. If you flip over and look at what happened at the Pavant, kind of the same thing happened. Now we're almost at a 40% reduction of permits to try and bring that back to to reach the age class objective. We'd like to see that same thing done here on the manti. Speaking to once in a lifetime, I'm going to put a different hat on for Utah and Oz. We support the division's recommendations to cut the permits back on the North San Rafael. We also support the division's recommendations to increase the number of tags on the Zion unit. Zion's a great unit. It's got a lot of sheep. It has a built-in nursery with Zion Park right next to it. Granted, issuing 9 permits will decrease your trophy quality, but quite frankly, having personal experience with that unit, there is room for more opportunity there.
And I don't think that 9 permits is going to dramatically cut that. We'd also like the division to explore the opportunity of increasing more opportunity in once-in-a-lifetime permits to SDO sheep with exploring the possibility of issuing some archery permits. We appreciate all you do. We know you got a tough job, but we ask that you consider these recommendations. Thank you.
Anybody else? Eric. Sorry.
Eric Luke with the Carbon Emery chapter of SFW. Just a couple of points I'd like to bring out for your consideration. The tooth data that is analyzed each year does include the CWMU units. As a general rule, those CWMUs are killing older age class of bulls. They have full-time guides that are out there scouting, guiding, and those hunters are a higher success rate than the general season. Also, you know, they're seeking out finding those older age class of bulls. It's not a huge number, so it's not a huge impact, but it definitely impacts the tooth data for the general public. I'd like to make a recommendation that in the future those CWMU tooth data are analyzed separately so that they don't affect the general public. We support what Troy just said with the change on the manti. And he said it very well when he said that one of the worst things you can do is this yo-yo effect. And at the rate that we're descending on the age class on the manti, that looks like exactly what's going to happen. We're going to overshoot the runway and crash, and then we're going to have to start rebuilding. So we support that. We realize you guys are, the division is in a real tough situation there. The supply is small and the demand is very high, and we appreciate all that you do.
Any other public comment? Shane? Some did, some didn't. So we'll work through it.
I'm also concerned on the numbers on the manti. Personally, I've been out there a lot and watching this downward spiral. I've been on several hunts helping people. The late season, we got a huge hole in them bulls. They are trending down really fast. So I support what Troy has said with the SFW is we really cut back right now before we clear below that number. And personally, I do know a few people that have shot just 2-3-year-old bulls that I know would bring that down. They don't care about a tooth data, how old they are, and they're not getting turned in. And I talk with these guys all the time. I appreciate all they do and their numbers, but for all the hunters and all the people I hunt with around on the manti, the quality has really plummeted in the last 2-3 years. So I recommend we really cut back or no increase for sure, because it's on a downward spiral. Thanks.
I miss anybody else that wants to speak toward the Bucks Bulls once in a lifetime. Go ahead. State your name, please.
Chad Kulo. I just want to reiterate a couple things. It's kind of hard for some people to hear back here, so I'm going to just kind of talk real close here. About the teeth data, just directly to the rack, I have a concern on that, the same as a lot of guys. I really feel the CWMU numbers, a lot of the guiding I do personally. I'm not speaking necessarily for SFW on a few things here, but personally, some of the guiding that I do, like Schofield West, we have a couple areas that we're in the high 8s and 9s on our average bulls. Because they're guided bulls, those people are paying for those tags. They want a trophy bull. The number last year is 6.1. Our objective is 5.75. That's not a huge number, but it's kind of falsifying that number a little bit. And then again, the younger bulls that are killed, there's spikes that are killed on limited entry, which is a sad thing to me, but people are doing it. The 3 and the 4-year-old bulls, yeah, they're doing a harvest report. And one thing to take into consideration when the vote is recommended on this, what are they using to measure? What kind of a tape are they looking at? You know, you guys know as well as I know, a 360 bull to a lot of guys is a 400-inch bull. A 300 bull to a lot of guys is a 350 bull. So those numbers are falsified enough that it's pulling that 6.1 from last year is pulling it in the wrong direction, I believe. If we don't level the playing field now, we're going to be in trouble. Same thing happened to the Nebo not too long ago. Those tags were cut. We don't want to see 40% of our tags cut next year, like on the Pavant. That's the direction we're headed if we don't make a change quick. So whoever puts out puts this out for recommendations and seconds it, keep those things in mind and vote that, throw that out separate. I don't know, this gentleman right here, the Henry Mountains guy, I'm not part of SFW on this at all because we vote a little bit different on this, but I have a concern. The drought, the 4-tag increase. Let's take our hats off of the DWR. We are above where we want to be right now, but why change it? Why change a good thing? With the drought into consideration and what else? You look at the animals that were killed this last year. We have never had that many big animals killed on the Henry Mountains. Just a crazy success rate. We're going to see a change this year. And just take that in consideration. We need to level that out as well. And personal experience on the Henry Mountains. I agree with the dogs. Let's let one leash dog follow a blood trail. I have a personal experience. 2010, I drew the Henry Mountains. I hit a 240-inch deer opening morning with my bow. There was no rule in place. I begged Sean Spencer, please let me track this buck. Let me bring a dog in. It wasn't in place, so I am so happy to see this, but why 72 hours? Just look back through that. Why do we have a 72-hour limit on it? I like that. I really appreciate the other division looking into that, and I think that has a lot of play from my particular instance because I voiced it quite heavily, seeing a 240-inch deer die because I couldn't find it with a dog. I'd have found it, and then I went ahead and shot a 220-inch deer. That's two big deer off the Henrys, and that's another reason. Let's not increase the tags. How many are wounded that aren't reported? So, appreciate it.
I'd like to ask the division to maybe put in perspective what CWMU teeth have to do with the
So they are used in the data, but I just had Kent check it on the Manti, so it changes it from 6.1 to 5.9 if you use it versus if you don't. So 2/10 of a year. It does make a little bit of a difference, no doubt. But that's not the case statewide. There are some units where actually it brings it down. So it can vary from one unit to the next. And another thing I wanted to bring into perspective, they talked about a couple of units where we fell behind the objectives. Those are units not that we over-harvested. Those are units where the objective was raised in the statewide plan. So we started out behind the eight ball, and now we're reducing permits to get there. It wasn't units where we over-harvested, and now we're trying to back off. We were harvesting based on old objectives, and the objectives got raised. So both the Dutton and the Nebo were mentioned as where we're trying to catch up now. Yeah, it is harder to catch up, but on the Manti, I don't think we've gotten there yet. So just to keep things in perspective, a lot of stuff gets thrown out here, and some of it is taken into consideration without looking at the exact why it's happening. So, I agree the Manti is one where, you know, we're still increasing permits, but we haven't reached objective yet. Whether we need to slow down or not, it's really hard to say. We did the same thing a couple of years ago. We slowed back. The next year, the ages went right back up. So it's hard for our biologists to anticipate exactly where the ages are going to be. they're going to be within that range somewhere.
What do you guys model? What you predict with the number of tags that you're issuing? Do you predict what the average age is going to be next year?
So, yeah, I mean, we would predict it's going to start to come back down. We can't predict exactly where it would be. We know how many permits it would take to stabilize that age. It's lower than it is now. So there will become a point where we would have to start reducing permits, no doubt about it. But I don't know where we reach that inflection point. I mean, the number that it's going to take to maintain 5.5 to 6-year-old is lower than it is currently. But we're playing catch-up still.
Okay, did we get all the public comment? Okay, we're going to close comment to the public and open it up to the RAC. Kevin?
Yeah, before there's going to be a lot of debate, but one thing I did want to bring up is I'd like to commend the Henry Mountain Grazers and the DWR. And not only has it probably made it a lot better for both of those groups, but although I do like UFC and Ultimate Fighting, I thought that this process was a lot better. So thank you.
It appears to me that the two big issues that the public brought forth was either mandatory tooth sampling or not, and number of tags on the manti for limited entry bull. Is there any other issues?
One thing that I'd bring up, probably too late to do this year, but I think the North Centerfell Desert Bighorn unit needs to be closed for a period of time. Let that herd, you know, if there's some miraculous way we can get it to recover. If you lose a non-resident tag in the process, darn.
Now that's the problem with setting seasons before we do data collection.
Yeah.
You been want to take a stab at a motion, or do you want to discuss any of this amongst us before a motion? I'm easy, guys.
Make a motion to give me an elk tag.
Dies for lack of second.
Is there any concerns from the DWR about the drought and the bison and the deer on the Henrys?
Yeah, I mean, Travis, there's always concern with any animal we manage and their habitat. I mean, we want healthy, robust populations of bison and deer and everything. And if the habitat's suffering because of that, then that's not a win-win. So, yeah, we are concerned.
Justin, I suppose that if things got bad, there's something you could do this year.
Yeah, and we've talked to the committee down there, and what we have is, it's really hard to predict. I mean, you don't know what kind of spring rainfall you're going to get. You don't know what kind of fall rainfall you're going to get. You don't know how all that's going to occur. What we do know is we didn't get a lot of snow down there this year. And so they have concerns, and they're down there all the time. They know the habitat. They know the landscape. And so it's something we can do. If things got really drastic, we could always propose more tags or talk about late-season transplants and things like that. And we don't want to see the habitat be damaged, especially when we've spent so much money and energy and effort trying to do chainings and reseedings and things like that.
One more question on the, I didn't see a Book Cliffs bison hunt yet. Is that coming up, or was it there?
It's a report of 4 tags.
Okay, my bad.
Yeah, there's 4 permits. It's a limited area, kind of in the northwestern part of the unit, abutting against the tribe. We're basically taking advantage of tribe bison that are coming off the tribe right now. We still don't have enough of the transplant stock that are old enough to harvest yet, but there are some bulls and cows that are coming off the tribe and winter in a certain area, and that's where that hunt will take place.
Do you have a feel for how many bison you have in Thompson now? I've spent 2 days up there last week, and you've got Buffalo and Thompson Canyon on Deer Point, Renegade.
Yeah.
Quite a few.
Yeah, I don't have the numbers with me. I'm sure if the biologist for that area was here, he'd be able to tell you better. Okay, there you go.
Yeah, they were all over 2 days ago.
Oh, were they?
Yeah, it was pretty close.
You're still hoping to, or have the option to do the depredation bison hunts like the past couple of years?
If they come off the unit, yes. So we've got the hunt on the unit now, but if they come off the unit, then they would be considered nuisance bison, then we could still have that hunt.
That's essentially if they cross the river?
Right. Yep, you got it.
Okay. Cross what river?
The
Green River.
The Green River. That's the boundary for the unit. And they have crossed it in the past, usually on when it freezes, but I'm sure they can swim it if they wanted to.
They swim the Yellowstone pretty good.
Ready for a motion?
I am.
All right. I'll make a motion to accept plan as presented, except for the Manti unit, limited entry elk, to have the reduction to the 2009 permits of 360 elk permits.
Okay. Say that again now.
To accept the division's plan, all but the limited entry elk unit on the Manti, to reduce the tax from the 482 to the 360, the 2009 permit numbers.
That's down to 2009 numbers?
Yeah.
Okay. We have a motion by Travis Pearson to accept the division division recommendation as presented, with the exception of the Manti limited entry elk bull tags.
To clarify, in 09 there were 395, so I'm not
395?
Sure. 395? If he wants it 360, that's fine, but that's just to clarify.
What was that?
In 09 there were...
Yeah, but 09 permits right here is 360.
2010. What's
2010?
I'm sorry. Our mistake. They're correct.
Accept the division's recommendation as presented, with the exception of the Manti limited entry bull tags, which the change will be to 360 limited entry bull tags. Is there a second to that motion?
I'll second.
Charlie seconded that motion. Any discussion? All in favor? Raising hold for a minute. 6 opposed. Motion carried 6-4. For or against? Against is easier. Todd, Kevin, Seth, and Daryl. Yes. Okay. Takes care of Bucks Bulls once in a lifetime. Now we're up to analyst permit recommendations.
There you go. All right. Thank you again, Mr. Chairman. As you mentioned, I'll be presenting our recommendations for the 2012 antlerless season. We'll start with deer.
We've already seen this graph. This is basically production fondo ratio. As I mentioned, it's kind of leveled out the last couple of years. And then the population shows the same trend because it's based on that production number. So we currently estimate our population statewide to be around 286,000 animals, showing a slightly declining trend. Given that, we are recommending 290 antlerless deer permits. All of those, with the exception of 150 permits, are designed to deal with depredation issues, so they're mostly early season hunts on croplands. The 150 that are designed to control populations are on the Panguitch Lake unit on the Parowan Front, where we have seen habitat damage, so we're trying to reduce the population on that on that part of the unit to basically not lose the wintering habitat there. It's basically about a mile wild habitat that runs around from Highway 20 to Cedar City, and it's only a mile wide because they can't cross the highway, and we've seen quite a bit of habitat damage there. And that hunt was in place last year, and we recommend the same numbers for this year. The region has taken out the local sportsmen and shown them the habitat damage, and they agree that this is probably a good thing to occur. Other than that, the rest of the permits are geared towards depredation. So, for elk, a little bit different trend. Our population objective statewide is right around 69,000. We're currently a little bit above 75,000, so we're certainly above objective on elk statewide. Obviously, there are some units that are at or below objective, but for the most part, most units are either at or above objective. To deal with that, we're recommending increasing antlerless permits from last year, where we had 12,174 permits, to this year, we're recommending 13,108 permits. Elk control permits, those are permits on areas where we're having a hard time controlling elk numbers. And these are mainly on units where we either want no elk or where private lands or tribal land issues make it tough for hunters to be able to access elk and harvest them. So with this elk control permit, anyone who already has an elk or deer or once-in-a-lifetime antlered permit can buy this over-the-counter and hunt those units during his hunt. If he or she sees a cow elk, they can harvest it. The three units where we have a zero objective are the Henry Mountains, the North San Rafael, and the San Juan Any Bull unit. On those, if you have an Any Bull tag or on the Henrys, even if you have a bison tag, you can buy one of those over the counter. The five units where we have private lands issues and tribal issues are the 9 Mile Range Creek, East Canyon, and Chalk Creek. Two new ones were added in the northern and northeastern region, the Morgan Southridge and the South Slope. Those are new. The other ones were already in place. Okay, moving to doe pronghorn and moose, we're recommending a slight increase in doe pronghorn. The plateau unit was just flown and has reached objective and will be above objective by the time the hunting season is upon us, so they have recommended 100 permits on that unit to try to stay ahead of it. We also have a population increasing in the North Ridge, the Cache North Ridge, northern part of the Ridge County, where we have a fairly good, healthy pronghorn population that's causing quite a bit of depredation issues, and they want to control that population. So we're recommending a slight increase in permits for antlerless or doe pronghorn. Moose, we are recommending no permits for antlerless moose. As I mentioned earlier, there are some issues going on with moose where we need to investigate, and we don't feel the populations can sustain any antlerless harvest right now. That's our recommendations. Thank you.
Questions from the rack.
I've got a question, Darius. Brad, are you ready? On the 9 Mile,
offering the antlerless tags to the antlered hunters, where we're already right at objective. I think actually we're a little bit low based on the counts. And we did reduce the overall cow numbers on the two cow hunts, but then we offered extra tags to everybody who basically comes in and gets a bull tag. Why did we do that?
Basically, I mean, you keep the same number of hunters afield without with the opportunity to kill some cows. Over the past couple of years, we've averaged somewhere between 8 and 14 cows getting killed during that hunt. It adds some opportunity. We're not really killing as many elk as we thought we would.
So even though we've gone from a limited entry to a general season bull hunt, we're going to be offering more tags, cow tags, to bull hunters.
There will be more guys afield out there, obviously, this year. But, you know, in the past, a deer hunter, which has been, you know, quite a lot on that unit, you know, could purchase one of those permits as well.
Right.
And any bull hunters on the rest of the unit. But, yeah, that Range Creek South portion that we opened up, we'll have a whole lot more guys afield with a cow tag in hand.
Right.
Generally speaking, though, in October, you know, the opportunity to kill a whole lot of antlerless elk is pretty limited just because the elk are at higher elevations, as you're aware.
So you don't think there's going to be an impact?
The harvest will increase, obviously. What we really did is we got rid of an October hunt that we used to have that had really low success, about 10% hunt success. We've kind of used this antlerless control permit to substitute for that. We've averaged about a dozen dead elk a year. It may double, but still not a really big impact. And when we cut tags by almost 200 tags this year, so it should even itself out.
What if we have another big snow year and we have a wipeout hunt again?
History has proven we can grow elk just fine. It's deer that we can't grow very well.
Thank you.
So they'll come back.
Any other questions from the rack? Anise, I've got a question on the Poncegon. It's getting close to objective. I mean, we're getting ready to...
Poncegon deer unit?
Yeah.
Yes.
We're getting ready to hunt does because of habitat conditions. And on the management bucks, they didn't increase any management bucks. Wouldn't it make sense if you're almost to objective to get rid of bucks that are never going to be trophies and replace them with those?
Yeah. So the hunt is on the Panguitch unit, not the Poncegon
okay.
unit.
Panguitch,
yeah,
okay.
there are no doe permits on the Poncegon unit, with the exception of some associated with agriculture.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, thanks.
Sorry for that.
Any other questions? Do we have any questions from the audience, public? Come on up, please, to the microphone.
I didn't want to walk up.
I know.
You're a hiker.
We're going to get an escalator next year.
You said you were a hiker. You're a hiker. Well, yeah, hiking. I just don't like walking in front of people. It made me nervous. I had a question on the doe permits. Are them only on Panguitch, or how many is actually in Carbon Emery County?
Are there
any? No. Okay, so it's just depredation. Okay.
There's 150 on the Panguitch to deal with the habitat damage, and then the rest of them, 140, are spread in different areas of the state to deal with depredation issues.
Okay. I just make sure we're trying to grow a deer here. We're not.
Any other questions from the public? Okay, we'll open it up to comments from the public. I have one card from Jeremy.
Jeremy Hansen with the United Wildlife Cooperative again, and we support all of DWR's recommendation on antlers, deer, pronghorn, elk, and moose, and also kind of it's not necessarily pertinent to this area, but we'd like to propose on the extended archery and the Wasatch, or all of the extended, to do away with the December 1st to December 15th doe-only portion. We've pulled our membership, and some people are concerned that it's starting to hurt, the population's starting to drop, and maybe just eliminate that two-week period at the end for the doe-only portion. So, thank you.
Lee Tracy?
going to represent myself rather than United Wildlife Cooperative because I don't agree with them on this thing. I was one of those folks that took that range ride on the Parowan Front, the Panguitch Lake doe hunts. And the recommended 150, for your information, is simply the number of deer recruited into the herd that use that unit, use that winter range. And in fact, the last 3 years, that's the number that they've been issued. But the habitat is deteriorating year by year, and it continues to deteriorate. So we asked the question point blank of the wildlife biologist that was there, how many does does it take to turn this habitat around? And we were told 400 to 600 per year for the next 2 years. So I personally would recommend that we double those number of doe tags on that particular unit. You won't see the Southern Rack proposing that simply because we were under some pressure we were working with the Sportsmen for Fish and Wildlife, the BLM, and the division, as well as some other people, and we were afraid that the number proposed by the division would frighten too many people because, you know, the deer herds are being lost. But if we don't do something more than we are doing now with that particular unit, we won't have any deer there to hunt at all. Thanks.
Thank you. That's all the cards I have specifically. I got lots of cards with just names on it. Come on up, Gary.
I've got some concern with the number of antlerless elk permits for the Central Mountains Manti. Last year there was 860 permits. This year the proposal is 1,900, which is over 100% increase. The population estimate went from 11,700 to 12,500, which is about, 800 increase. I think I'd like to recommend that the board reduce that number somewhere back down around 860, maybe 1,000. I don't think an increase would hurt too much, a little bit of an increase, but from 860 to 1,900, I think is really way too much of an increase on that unit.
Okay. Thanks, Gary. Brad, do you want to? Brad or Wade, I guess either one. Just want to tell us the reasoning why we're.
Just to clarify, I appreciate it. Kind of by design, over the last several years, we had. You know, 600 to 900 antlerless tags on the Manti, and we were slowly growing that elk toward its objective of 12,000 elk. We were gaining 300-400 elk a year. We knew this year we'd probably hit that, and then we had really poor success and a pretty good calf crop this year, to where we overshot it quite a bit. And in order to catch up with that and next year's calf crop, you really got to be aggressive on the antlerless harvest. So really, this is as conservative as we dared go to get it back to objective. You know, we're obligated to manage near that 12,000 elk, and boy, if we manage what we did this past year, we'd be over 13,000 in a quick hurry, and they're tough to stop once you get them rolling. So,
out of a population of 12,000 elk, how many calves are going to be born out of that 12,000 total?
I mean, there's. Just rough, pardon me. I mean, think here, 6,000, let's just say rough ballpark, there's at least 3,000 calves getting born each year. So 1,500 female calves hitting the ground every year that you got to keep up with. You got to kill that almost to maintain it. So you can see how this is on the conservative end of things. It'll get us there in 2 or 3 years if things work out right.
Thanks, Brent. Any other comments from the public? You do like to walk.
I just like to argue. I actually had a, you know, no offense to anybody else, SFW members. I think that it should be brought up, but not to 1900. I'd recommend 1400 and then coming back the next year and seeing if we still need to manage that. So therefore, it's not such an impact if we actually do kill 1900. You know, I doubt it's 100%, but still, you know, I would rather shoot under ball and then next year catch up with that, or if we overextend and actually really kill a lot, then we can go from there to either drop or increase or stick with the same. Because I know last year a lot of people didn't kill elk just because of the bad snow. And then another thing with that gentleman back there, I don't think we should kill more does. Actually, I was going to ask Justin. Justin, how hard is it to, instead of killing does that's devastating an area, how hard would it be to trap and transplant them where they're actually needed, where the habitat could support them?
Well, yeah, and currently we have a policy against that. So it's not a matter of effort. It's just whether socially we're going to do that or not. And right now we have a policy against it. So, no.
Why? Sorry.
How much time we got?
Yeah, I just...
I mean, there's a lot of issues to it. I mean, it...
Disease?
I don't know.
Do you want to answer it on a statewide basis?
Yeah, the many reasons we do not transplant deer is for the first reason it's never been shown to be successful. The majority of them end up dying. So you're moving a bunch of deer, putting a lot of effort into it, and the majority of them die. The other is a disease issue. You don't know what diseases they have. You move them into habitat where they are going to interact with other deer. And there are those issues. The third is, if deer, places that are void of deer, there's a reason for that, and it's not because there were never deer there. It's there are other issues, either it's habitat, predation, or something. Unless you deal with the issue on the ground, putting more animals there is not going to solve the problem. So there's lots of reasons not to move deer. There are a few to move deer. And along with that, we are looking in this specific unit to do a research study and move a few deer and see how that works. But that's purely research, and it's not going to be something that we could utilize as a management thing unless we are 100% sure that it's going to be useful. And until we do that research, we will not, you know, we won't just move deer just because we have too many someplace. Our main tool is still going to be harvest.
Well, that being said, keep it at 150, do the research, save as many freaking deer as we can because we're losing them by hundreds. So, yeah, thanks.
Eric?
One point I'd like to bring up concerning the antlerless elk on the Manti. This is the third year of their, they fly it every 3 years. It's due to be flown again next year. I know they have models that they use to come up with these numbers, but I would recommend that we reduce that. That's a pretty huge increase, almost 130% approximately. I think we need to cut that back. Let's fly it next year and see where our count really ends up. And then we can make a better judgment on whether those tags need to be increased.
Any other comments from the public?
We would support the division. We understand that the habitat's the most crucial thing. Worst case scenario, if we can't come up with a solution or an alternative for these deer, we understand they got to be harvested. Otherwise, we're going to lose them all. We do believe that there's been some advances in different techniques in the ability to translocate deer. For just information for those in here, SFW has offered to foot the bill personally for this. The thing that Anise alluded to is actually translocating 150 deer it'd be an extensive study on to see if we can do some things differently to ensure or help improve the success rate to it. I know one thing for sure. If they got a bullet in their head, they're dead. If you translocate them, you lose 90% of them, you still got 10% alive.
Any other public comment?
I know that all of us from the SFW board have got up and spoke. We haven't thrown out a specific number that I would hope you would throw out there. I think all of us can agree 1,900 is too many cows on the Central Manti. 860, okay, we need to make an adjustment. We're proposing to meet a middle ground to try to keep everybody happy that somebody proposes 1,200 cows. That's a middle ground. We're going to fly it next year. Let's see where we get. You know, Blair has the same concern I have. You kill too many cows, we're going to be in trouble. You're giving that extra cow tag to an antler hunter. You know, I won't address that because I don't really have an opinion on that, not knowing what's going to happen. But as far as on the Central Manti, let's try 1,200, fly it next year, get an accurate number, and then we make a decision to adjust on our cows from there.
Mark?
I want to comment on some of the debate that's gone on regarding the Manti cow elk numbers. I think it's important to note that we're at 50% of objective for mule deer on the same unit. There's some indications that there could be direct and indirect competition with elk and mule deer. So when you're voting on this, I think we have to be very much aware that we are in a scenario where we maybe can't have our cake and eat it too. We may have to make a decision here. There could be some correlation. There's definitely quite a bit of range trend data that suggests our habitat for mule deer in the southeast region is in decline. Rather elk are to blame for that or not is certainly a subject that could be debated. But if we are looking at a scenario where we have a herd that appears to be able to sustain that harvest in elk, but then we have a herd of mule deer who do not seem to be doing well, I think we got to make a decision there which one we're looking at. Regarding mule deer transplant, I guess my 50 cents on it is mule deer have a high degree of fidelity. They don't adapt to things. I watch the same bucks on the same winter ranges, the same summer ranges, in some cases for a half a dozen year, or for 6 years in a row. They'll show up in the same places. They'll show the same patterns. There's actually quite a bit of research on transplant and also quite a bit on highway migration corridors being cut off. And time again, it shows the same thing. They don't adapt. They're creatures of habit. And so I guess my take on this is we're much better off to look at how we can change our habitat conditions with that money than try and deal with transplants. Thank you.
Any other public comment? Okay, if not, we'll close the public comment and open up. Kevin?
Yeah, one comment I have is I do appreciate the concern of the public concerning the antlerless harvest on the Manti. One thing that I do want to address is an appreciation to Wade and Brad and those with the DWR. There is a lot of work that goes into spring rides, going up checking utilization on plants where you check browse and check what the utilization. There are standards on how much pressure a plant can sustain before that plant is lost. And there is a lot of work that goes into looking at, a lot of work working with the agencies, with the BLM, with the Forest Service. Many of those plants are 85 to 90%, and there's a lot of discussion that goes back and forth between the agencies and those groups into going to that. And I know that, like Brad said, it is on the conservative side if you really put the numbers to it. But although as sportsmen we want the best, there are some consequences when we don't do that. One of the things to be mentioned is many parts of the Manti is 38% of normal with moisture this year. And with that being said, the cattlemen have been advised in their range meetings that they will be going home early, or a very likely chance that they'll be going home early. I know it will be a very hard pill to swallow if we, at the same time in doing that, we let them know that we'll be going 1,000 to 2,000 over objective on our elk.
I'd like to add to that. I work for the BLM, and we are starting to warn ranchers that potentially we'll have cuts in grazing. And as we look at allotments that also that elk utilize, and we have cattle on those allotments, it becomes a problem when you have populations of elk that are above objective. So as we move into a potential drought situation, we need to consider that.
Any other comments from the RAC?
Haven't we been in a drought for 12 years or so? At least I know San Juan County has.
Since Lake Bonneville went down.
That one good year with 8 feet of snow in Monticello.
Yeah.
That wasn't enough.
That wasn't enough.
I do have a comment. How did, on the Plateau Fish Lake, Thousand Lakes, your objective, the objective is 4,800, you're at objective, but there's zero tags, antlerless tags.
Yeah, that is a tricky one. A couple of things there.
I'd like you to do that for 9 Mile Range Creek, too.
Sure. I wish I could do it everywhere. But here's what happened there. They flew that unit, and usually they fly a whole slew of units around it, but snow conditions were not very good, so they weren't able to get a good flight on that unit, and they didn't fly any of the units around it, so it was a partial survey. And because they counted few animals and because of the anticipated increase in objective to be on the safe side, they recommended no permits, and they figured if they increased the objective, they would be at objective almost immediately, and then they could start harvesting antlerless animals at that point. Now, if that increase in objective does not get approved, they'll be behind the eight ball next year, and they'll have to increase permits quite a bit. So it was kind of one of those. It's a very high profile unit, that has had what some would consider too much antlerless harvest at some points, and they didn't want to seem like they were being too aggressive on the region, that is. Does that make sense?
So is it the same? I think it's the Central Mountains Nebo. The objective is 1,450. We're below objective. I misread that. Thanks.
It appears the anti number of cow tags was the big issue. There was recommendation of doubling the Panguitch Lake doe tags and doing away with the extended doe only hunt. But by far the most comment was on the manti cow tags. If we're ready for a motion.
So if SFW is willing to pay for the 150 doe transplant, is the DWR going to go for that?
You want to give us a little more details on the SFW?
Yeah, so basically in that area, the SFW for the last couple of years, because of this range damage, had wanted to transplant animals instead of killing them. And as a division, as you know, we've tried it in the past, and it's never worked out very well.
Isn't the Henry Mountains deer population a transplant?
It is not. There were deer transplanted to the Henry Mountains. But there were also deer there as well. And the results are mixed whether it was a success or not, just because not enough animals were actually tracked to be able to tell. The majority of them did die directly after they were transplant, but the existing population there started rebounding directly after that. Whether that was because of the transplant or because of range improved is really hard to tease out.
You just fed the lions.
Basically, yeah. So what SFW proposed is to pay for the entire thing because the division didn't see us using our resources to fund a transplant that we have seen failed so many times in the past. And they were willing to fund it and fund the research that goes along with it. So we're willing to do a good research project looking at if we can make transplant work. So we're both looking at that being the transplants where we get animals from, but we still haven't decided where we will transplant them to. A lot of details still need to be worked out, where that void habitat may be. We really don't want to put them on top of other deer just because we don't know what the effect will be, both disease-wise and predators. And there's a lot of relations there. We don't know what will happen. So we want to design a good study. SFW is willing to pay for it. It's not going to come out of work that would otherwise be taken towards habitat. They're paying out of it out of their own coffers, not out of the conservation permit money. So it's one where we can learn something, and if it works, we may be able to replicate it. And if it doesn't work, we can put the whole thing to rest and say we will not remove deer. So we will do it one more time and study it correctly and make sure we get the results that we get.
You say one more time, but can you tell us when you have done it? Give us some examples.
The southern region did it in that same area. No, they moved them out of the beaver area out in the West Desert, and the majority of them died.
What is majority? I mean, can you give us numbers?
I don't. This is why this is always, it has never been studied well. And this is why if this happens again, we want to make sure it's studied well. They were following these animals. Not all of them had radio collars. If you don't radio collar every animal, you don't know the fate of every animal. So, but the majority were not seen again. Either both the radio collared animals were found dead, and the ones that were ear tagged were not seen again. So either they wandered way away from that area or they died somewhere and were never found. None of it is well documented. But most of the biologists that worked on those, most of them retired now, will tell you, I'll never move another deer. It was a total failure. But unfortunately, they didn't document it well, although their recollection of it is it was a failure.
Is that just with deer, or is it with everything else?
No, it's mostly with deer because deer are so traditional in their movements. So basically, if you move them away, they want to try to find where they were, and if they can't find it, they often end up in suboptimal habitat where predators are more effective or where they can't reproduce at a high enough rate to maintain. There's a lot of different things going on. Yeah, most animals we can transplant. You know, sheep, we've had a lot of good success. Elk, obviously, most of the elk in the state have begun from transplants.
Really? Can you say that one more time, please?
I mean, obviously. So if a pronghorn do well when transplanted, just mule deer just do not, because of their migratory nature and they're so traditional in their movements, just do not do well when you move them.
Make it quick.
Yep. I'll just take a second. There is one. We talked about the Santa Rosa Islands in California. It took deer off the Kaibab in the 1940s in them old platter trucks and drove them all the way to California. Took them off the Kaibab, trucked them to California, put them on a boat, and floated them to an island, and they're still surviving today. So there is some success on transplants. I mean, that might be...
That as well. Yeah, if all the habitat requirements for a deer are located within a small area, they'll do just fine. They transplant mule deer in Mexico and Texas all the time, but they can live their whole life within a 1 square mile. When they have to make migrations to find summer and winter range, that's when you have the problem. So, yeah, just because it's a mule deer living in the Intermountain West is not the same as a mule deer that can find everything it needs within a 1 square mile area. So there are differences. And every Intermountain West state that has transplanted has seen the same failure rate that we have.
One more question. What's the success rate on that Manti unit as far as the cow hunts? Do you know? Anybody? So it's about a 50% success rate.
I mean, the hunts vary, but sure. Overall, if you lump
what about on a bad snow year?
Yeah. And statewide, we run between 40 and 60. So it's similar to what statewide are.
So 2 years ago, Brad, when we had really big success on the cow hunts, do heavy snowfalls early affect the manti like they do some other areas?
Yeah, they do. One thing we've done kind of by design is to minimize the late season hunts on the manti, just to not disturb the deer, and you know we use them as much as we can to, you know, to be a tool to help with depredation. But those late season hunts are 80-90% success. I mean, they're very effective hunts. So yeah, there's that.
And 0%
yeah, yeah, this year they were terrible. But yeah, the recommended permit numbers we have before you, only 20% of those are late. So there isn't the potential to have a whole bunch of harvest, you know, 80% success over the whole amount, just for those late hunts.
So a heavy snow year can impact it, but overall for the manti, the weather is not going to be a huge impact in the tag numbers, say over a 3 year period.
Shouldn't. I mean, most of that harvest is happening in October. You know, stuff happens in October that varies your success, but not as dramatically as it does in the wintertime in December.
Great. Thanks.
We ready to make a motion?
I would move that we accept the division's recommendations on the antlerless.
I'll second it.
The motion was made by Blair Eastman to accept the division's proposal as presented, seconded by Pam Riddle. Any discussion on the motion? All in favor? Opposed? Antlerless CWMU permit recommendations.
Our CWMU coordinator took a different position, so we that position is vacant right now, so they've asked the region to take care of it real quick. And as you can see, it's only six slides long, so this will be short. Thank you. Seems like we just did this in the fall. We bring before you the both the buck bull and the antlerless permit recommendations for CWMUs that you already voted on, and it's a 3-year plan. But when we do the antlerless cycle, as we do right now, we have an opportunity to change those permit numbers in case we've had some changes after surveys or things like that, or you know, let the CWMUs match the trend on the overall mountain. So this is just a quick overview of what we have going there. As I mentioned, we have they're on a 3-year rotation. So we had 14 CWMUs that CORs, they're already going on, and then the 48 that we just renewed this past year, which totals 62 total CWMUs that are requesting antlerless permits for a total of 1,646 antlerless permits, which includes some deer, antelope, and elk, as well as moose. I believe the moose we've removed for this year. The two changes down at the bottom there are two CWMUs in the northern region, Stillman Creek and Grass Valley Clark Canyon, that just got rid of the antlerless moose hunts on those CWMUs due to decreasing populations. A quick review of kind of how antlerless permits work on CWMUs. On the column on the left there, CWMU operators select a permit distribution for their bucks or bull hunts, and associated with that is kind of an inverse permit distribution plan for the antlerless stuff. So those top arrows there, if a CWMU elects to have 90% of their bull tags, they keep, and 10% of the public gets, you know, when it's time for antlerless hunts, all the hunting opportunity goes to the public, and it kind of goes down through there. So if they give up a little bit more on the bucks, they get a bigger share of the antlerless tags. Just kind of for a review there. Pronghorn's a similar situation there. This is last year's permit numbers across the state, totaling, you know, 280 private vouchers and 1,286 public permits. You can see the lion's share of that is antlerless elk tags, you know, nearly 1,200 1,200 antlerless elk tags on CWMUs across the state. And for comparison, this is this year's proposal, very similar, totaling 1,646 total antlerless animals, the lion's share of it, over almost 1,600 of it's antlerless elk. There are some very minor changes in the region. We had to change Spring Creek Dodge. There were some slight increases there. You know, that CWMU split this past fall. So there were some slight increases there and a slight increase on the Emma Park CWMU as well. Those are just to address some increase, you know, just keeping up with harvest on the overall unit. And I believe that is it.
Questions for Brad on CWMU antlers? Any questions from the public? Any comments from the public on CWMU antlers? No comment. We'll go back to the rack and open it up for discussion and motion.
I'd make a motion to accept as presented.
Motion made by Kevin to accept the division's recommendation as presented. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Larry's been second. Any discussion on the motion? All in favor of the motion? Unanimous. Bonus point rule amendments. You don't look at all like Greg Sheehy.
You said Jerry.
Sorry.
Yeah, Greg, I walked into his office this morning and I said, Greg, how'd it go last night? He'd lost his voice right before the meeting started. Hasn't got it back, so you get me.
Oh, boy. Let's see. I don't even know. Is it on here somewhere? I see a lot of clouds. It's a pretty sunset.
Salt Lake's view is always in the clouds.
Well,
we're always facing the sunset.
There it is. Awesome. Strike depth in the minutes.
Yeah. You know, I kept waiting for a motion to have it rain. I keep hearing about the drought. That's all you got to do, right? All right. So my name is Brian Christensen. I'm a licensed wildlife licensing specialist up in the Salt Lake office, and I get to talk to you about the bonus point stuff. Now this comes before you for kind of three basic reasons. There's you know, some social reasons here, there's some practical reasons, and there's some economical reasons, and they're all kind of bundled up, and hopefully I can be very clear about those. Is it not quite enough there, Bill? Well, I'm kind of short. Okay, I didn't want to break it. Is that better? Okay. In the back, you can hear that better? Okay. All right, so let's see. In 2008, December of 2008, the Wildlife Board and the RAC process went over a whole bunch of different ideas and concepts on how the big game drawings could be, you know, modified a little bit and change kind of the way things are done. And they went over a myriad of things. There was stuff about bonus points. There was youth opportunities. How to treat surrenders when permits get turned back to the division. There were quite a few different things that got discussed. And one of the things that got adopted back then, and it was a division recommendation at the time, was this bonus point forfeiture rule. And it basically says that if somebody goes three consecutive years without applying for a limited entry or a once-in-a-lifetime permit or bonus point, then all the bonus points for big game go away for that person. We just erase them. And there were some really good intentions at the time to have this become adopted. And of those of those intentions, let me go to the next slide here. I've listed three basically, and the first one was there was a thought that it could clean up our records and give us a little bit better picture of who's really competing in the drawings, and by removing non-participants, maybe we'd have a cleaner window, so to speak. The next one here is that it would kind of take out those people that weren't contributing to wildlife on an annual basis, and I'll go into that here in a bit. And then the third one, the main reason was that it might reduce some competition, and really just keep those that are interested, and then therefore improve the odds for those that are really vested in continuing year after year. So what happened is, you know, that was adopted back in 2008 and actually implemented its beginning sequence, started in 2009, and now we're at 2012, so we've got our 3-year period behind us. And we've been able to, in this third year, we've been able to run a lot of numbers and look at our data, look at the kind of people we're talking about here, and we found some really interesting information and also some concerning information. And so I'll kind of go through 5 or 6 things here. I've listed them, and I'll elaborate a little bit more on what our concerns are, and then we'll go to our recommendation. So the first thing I've listed up there is that we believe that the division may have a certain obligation to notify adequately each one of these people that are subject to lose their bonus points. That's a big enough deal, and people are very, very interested in these bonus points and their value to them. And to kind of throw out a number of how many we're talking about here, this was a surprising thing for us. We have about, in total, we have about 300,000 people that hold bonus points. And this year, if we're to implement this rule, we're going to wipe out 95,000 people's bonus points. None of us expected it to be that high, but 95,000. So 1 out of 3 people is going to lose their bonus points. So a little concerning. What that means is going back to this legal potential legal obligation that we may or may not have, but it likely would be there, or at least appropriate for us to notify each person. That potentially could bring about a $70,000 total, a cost, just to notify these folks at 95,000 people. So that's a little concerning as well, and I'll talk about that $70,000 in just another second. But let's go to the next one. Non-participants. We, like I said before, we thought maybe that these folks that have applied for points have disappeared and they're not, you know, contributing to licenses and things like that anymore. And we actually found that within the last 3 years, 38,000 of those 95,000 have bought some sort of hunting license or over-the-counter permit. So a third of them are still really active doing things. So that was one thing that we looked at. The next one here is the odds. We found out that it really didn't improve the odds, and there's 2 reasons for that. One of them seems obvious now, and it's that if somebody applied for a point a few years ago and they haven't done it since then, they're not competing anymore. So there really isn't a change in odds unless one thing happens, and that's renewed interest. And by doing this, we have seen approximately 10,000 people in our data set have come back and renewed their interest in hunting again, or at least keeping their bonus points in over the last couple of years. So 10,000 people came back. So if our goal was to make the odds a little better, we didn't do that. We actually brought more people back, which is good for hunter retention and other things like that, but it did not make the odds better, and that's pretty clear. So the next one on here, administrative notification costs. I mentioned the $70,000. That's the potential cost. Essentially, that's sending a letter. It's materials, it's handling, it's postage, and some systemic changes to the programming of the computers so that they know what goes away and what stays. So that's all kind of tied into one thing. That's probably a bit of a conservative number given the rate of postage now. And our biggest concern with that is that under budgetary constraints that we've got, we honestly believe that the $70,000 could go to much more beneficial purposes. You know, perhaps habitat projects, perhaps, you know, other things that could really, really do great things for wildlife rather than just telling somebody their points went away. Hunters affected, I mentioned 95,000, and then a negative impact on hunter retention. We have a concern about this, and that's the division's really interested and strives to not only recruit new people to the hunting field and wildlife conservation in general, but also to retain those that are currently involved. And we're not under the belief anymore that telling 95,000 people that we're not going to let you have your points anymore just because you skipped 3 years is going to promote any kind of retention. And one example was one of the guys I work with. He had points in another state, and that other state has a 2-year rule, and he let 10 points go away, and he's not going back. You know, at that point, there's been a tie that's been severed. If people choose not to apply, we're not sure all the reasons. We believe that many may have applied for 1 or 2 points, maybe for a kid or something, and had the intention of applying later or using those points later, where others may have been hit heavily by the economic situation. You may have lost your job, and for the past few years trying to recover there. So there's a variety of reasons. Some people may have just moved out of state and are not competing anymore. But it doesn't cost the division anything to just have those points sit there. They're not competing. You know, if they're not applying, they're not competing. And in essence, if we did remove points, we would actually have to duplicate our data set, all the database that exists. We'd have to kind of track all those things that we got rid of for reasons of, you know, you might, as an example, think of maybe somebody that's been in military for 3 or 4 years, comes back, sees their points are gone, and we got to maybe consider giving them back for whatever reason. And the division tries to keep records of what people had, how long they've had it, when they earned it, and when we got rid of it, in case there are disputes or reasons to reinstate things. So it actually is going to double the amount of stuff that we have to track. It doesn't actually clean anything up. So for all these reasons, and a few, maybe a few others, we'd like to recommend that the division, that the RACs and the board allow us to rescind this section, R657-62-9, and not have us actually enforce this third year, and we just have this bonus point forfeiture go away. So that's what I've got for you.
Any questions for Brian?
Yeah.
Any questions from the audience? Any comments from the audience?
All right. Had to be one, otherwise I wouldn't have anything else to do.
I flat out say I'm media whore. No, the big thing I have is if they're not contributing, you know, what's the point of sitting there with their bonus points constantly? I do agree that you should notify them instead of like letters or something. I'd suggest maybe email for those that you do have. Others, you know, go with the letter. But yeah, I would suggest notify them. If they do it, they do it. If not, cut them. And that would be my suggestion. So, but I would actually keep this in place. And that's just me. That's, I don't have a damn job. But, you know, I can go pick up, you know, 16 cans and get $5. So, you know, it's not that hard.
Okay, we'll close public comment.
Motion.
My motion is to accept the rule as presented.
Second.
Accept the recommendation as presented.
You need that reiterated, or you got it?
One last item. We got item on the vote. Oh, sure. Anybody go?
It's unanimous.
Okay. I'm on loose manual plan.
It appears our I got a newer version of PowerPoint than this computer can handle, but it was one slide long, so we can do it without a slide. So there's a picture of a pretty moose, and then the second slide is we're presenting a 9-mile moose plan just because one really doesn't exist for that unit. Sorry. Like all our other management plans for different species, it outlines that we'll manage for appropriate habitat and have a population objective and manage to that. Kind of for some background for that unit, it's a unit where we've never transplanted moose into that area. Moose have kind of colonized that area by themselves and done okay, comparatively speaking. Seems like in the southern part of the state, moose haven't done terribly well, and they've done better than other areas in the region. For that reason, we wanted to establish a management plan to open the door for transplants in the future. The population right now, we're estimating about 30 moose on the whole mountain. This includes the Range Creek and the Anthro subunits, the entire 9-mile unit. We'll have we're proposing a population objective of 100 moose and allow for transplants in the future. To augment that population and give it a try there. We've never done it there. I guess the real selling point for the public, I think, is 80% of the crucial moose habitat that's mapped on that unit is on private land. The private land owners are on board with this and support this management plan. Should the population get established and hunting opportunities present themselves, most of the moose acreage is in CWMUs, and the hunting opportunity would be at least 50% to the, you know, more than 50% of the hunting opportunity would go to the public. So, despite most of these moose living on private land, the public gets a pretty good deal out of it. So, other than that, if you have any questions, I think I'm done.
Any questions for Brad? How many moose are there now?
About 30. We just flew it last year. Or just a few months ago, we count 12. We count more on that unit than we do on the Manti, and we've put moose there. So. Yeah, it doesn't look real imminent just because our moose populations are in pretty poor shape right now. I think the original intent was as those nuisance moose occur on the Wasatch Front during the summer months, we could move some of them up there, you know, when they catch them. Right now, I assume they'll be wanting to restock their own areas, put them back on those units.
Any other questions from the public? Comments from the public?
No comment.
Nope. Jeff made the motion to accept the recommendation for the management plan.